The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast. But the QA is what we're really here for, obviously stands for question and answer. We're already getting some great chatter here as we all laugh about how much time zones and time changes are silly and confusing, and trying to communicate when you're going to be doing a live stream can be a complicated endeavor, especially now that we're only into our second week of daylight savings time and my body has still not adjusted. Still so angry. And this is the thing in the modern era that we're doing just because we've always done it. So, everybody, good morning. I hope you had a lovely weekend. I'm seeing some great names here in the chat. Frank Gallo, Arthur Lee, Sveticus, Farhan, Muppinish, Golan, J-Man, Gornlord, Onskon, Muppinish, Otaku, Fungi. Hey, I'm a pretty fun guy. Dave Burns, McCorkerin, Barry Johnson, Ron Guido. I know I'm missing someone in there, and I apologize, but we are ready to go. ER1980, just giving me a little wave. We've got so much news in the news block to kind of check out. Muppinish, I'm here twice. Did I say Muppinish twice? That's hilarious. So much news in the news block to cover this week. And this is yet another week where I'm kind of trying to feel out like a couple different ways to mess around with stuff on YouTube versus the Patreon versus my own blog. And I'm really kind of hitting some of those points of just, I'm not really quite sure where to put energy. And man, does this stuff take so much time to sort out. Like if I want to make one little change to my blog and I want to see how that change like impacts traffic and readership and stuff like that, it's just so much extra legroom. I mean, you kind of get a sense of why so many content creators just kind of ride the momentum of how they've always done things. And whenever they change something, it's such a huge deal to make that change. Speaking of daylight savings time, this is coming by way of Carl. Speaking of daylight savings time, apparently us Albertanes are going to try to get rid of daylight savings time for the second time again. Yes, please do. those of us in California would greatly appreciate any conversation or momentum in getting rid of this, because we've had like ballot initiatives of, do we want to start the process of examining the transition to move away from daylight savings time change? And it's such a pain. We've already voted on this, I think, twice since I've moved out here to California, and we voted yes, and we still keep having the ballot initiative to like examine the impact of it as opposed to just doing it. Muppinish, who shared the robot spores? Was that me? Did I actually share that article? We're going to be talking about that in the news block, so I don't want to kind of get ahead of myself here too much. So why don't we kind of make that transition again? I hope everybody had a lovely weekend. Ours was really, really chill. Marie and I were both just whooped. And again, I blame daylight savings time. Our schedule was way off. Lex was way off. Like the inordinate amount of energy it takes to shift your routine an hour just arbitrarily. And then we really haven't been getting the benefits here in Southern California. I'm going to sound like such a whiny Californian. You ready? Y'all ready to make fun of me for being a whiny, spoiled, soft, pampered Californian? When we do daylight savings time, it usually results in a significant difference in brightness throughout the day. But we've also been going through this crazy monsoon weather. I've been living in California for 20 years. I have not seen weather like this ever before. This sustained rainy season. We usually get like a day of rain, then like a week off, 2 days of rain, then like we won't get rain for like another 6 months. From like the end of last year to now, it's just been this constant rolling, like 1 week of beautiful sunshine, then another week of like hazy, hazy gray. I shared a photo on the Patreon. We had fog here in the hills, very uncharacteristic, that looked like it came straight out of a horror film. I mean, it was intense. It was really cool. But that is not weather I am familiar with here in Southern California. And so we go through daylight savings time. We're not getting the benefits of daylight savings time. It is dark and gloomy right now. I have the windows open. This is the additional light, and it's darker in my office than I think if I just kicked on my extra studio lights. Yeah, Dave Burns, climate change sure is neat, huh? I love it. Oh, man. All right, so that's great. So short story incredibly long. I've got so much content kind of hitting a choke point, and I'm not sure how to kind of push past it. I've got phone reviews, I've got gadget reviews, I've got accessory reviews. I'm trying to finish up a video on Steam Deck and mobile gaming accessories. Again, it's no matter what happens, I'm pretty confident that like YouTube traffic is going to nosedive. My blog traffic has actually been pretty healthy just in kind of filling out those gaps. And then the Patreon is still doing this great, like kind of consistent conversation. So I think I'm going to be using YouTube Shorts to talk more about what happens on the Patreon, you know, so when great questions come in and we want to do like a little video short just to kind of talk about that, that's where that's going to live. I don't really have great ideas for other short form videos. I'm really bad at doing short form. I host a 2-hour weekly podcast because I can't shut up and just get to the point. So trying to cut something in like 60 seconds or less is not my forte, which is why the Patreon shorts are kind of fun. I got a great question. Can I actually answer that question in under a minute? We'll see. Probably not. It takes a lot of editing. Marilyn saying good morning. We've got Lamp Rose Bros just kicking in there. Also saying hey to folks in the chat. I know I've missed a few other people joining in and hitting the chat here too. So good morning, everybody. Let's get that set back there. So we can knock out a little housekeeping, you know, just talk about some of the projects I actually did get out. Here, let me go over to screen share. This one was kind of fun because I was talking to this company the end of last year, And it took a while just to sort of work out how to do a little sponsored video on upgrading your automobile's dash cam. But we finally got that video all put together. This is the DD Pi Z50. I want to say ZV50. It is not a ZV50. Let me tell you, just from how many other gadgets and products and Zs and Vs and Xs and phones and tablets and stuff, I had to reshoot this video twice. Because my mouth would immediately add extra letters and I wouldn't catch it while I was reading off of my notes to try and get through this video. So the fact that I almost just did it here again on the live stream, it's the Z50, not the ZV50. That's a different product. Also a Sony camera, I believe. So this is the new dash cam DD Pi Z50. And again, just a little bit of a conversation about what the product can do. That's obviously why we do the sponsored video, but I also wanted to talk about some of the legal and insurance implications of owning a dash cam and how it's kind of frustrating here in Southern California that we have not been getting insurance breaks on installing better safety and protection equipment in our cars. So hopefully a conversation that will expand and that you can also take to your local elected officials and say, hey, I think this is behavior we'd want to invest in. Scrolling on down, I also just wanted to do a little revisit on my Intel Nook. I have an Intel Nook 9 Extreme 9th Gen. So it's a little older. I mean, we're now on 13th Gen parts and products. And so we're kind of roughly 4-ish years since I put that Nook together. And the actual Nook case was doing very poorly. The Nook would immediately like click off, and it seemed to be some kind of power supply failure. So I went hunting on eBay and Amazon, and I tried to find a replacement for that. And I was really worried I'd have to get the same Nook case with the same power supply issues. But thankfully, Cooler Master had made a different enclosure case for the little Nook card. So we popped it in that new Cooler Master case. It's now been running a couple weeks, and it's been so much better. So just a fun little trip down PC building memory lane. I love these little teeny small form factor PC builds. Like, I love doing little Nook style PC builds. And I was really, really grateful that Cooler Master had made this product, even though it's kind of technically been discontinued now, because the Nook 9 form factor never really took off the way I think Intel wanted it to. And then, just as an ongoing conversation that we've had here on the podcast a couple of times, I wrote up an editorial, When iPhone Parents Bully Android Parents, just kind of talking about the experiences of trying to raise a kid, and then we see all of these headlines, like, under the age of 30, new smartphone consumers overwhelmingly adopt iPhones, right? And there's like a social momentum to that. And I think we always phrase this as kids are somehow formed consumers that are making their own purchasing decisions on products based on the meritocracy of the free market. And in our family's experiences, we're seeing a lot of taught behavior from parents instilling those tech values onto their kids. And then later, we're all just so befuddled as to why are kids treating each other so horrifically based on what phone they own and what color text messages they have. What is this new social dynamic that technology is bringing? And from our experiences, it kind of feels to me more like parents are kind of leading that discussion and then trying to wash their hands of the consumerism behind why they're teaching their kids to do things like this. But in several instances very recently, it just became very blatant. Now with a couple different parents in our social circles who can't help but comment on things like, oh no, there's a green bubble in our group chat. And somehow that is perfectly acceptable behavior to them. But I also think it's another part of the conversation to extend where most of the issues that iPhone owners have with things like messaging are not the fault of Androids. They're the fault of Apple breaking and not adopting standards. And when you try to point that out to them, they get very standoffish. Or if you comment on their green bubble bullying, then you become the jerk. Like, why are you getting so sensitive? And you're like, you're highlighting everyone in the group chat who has an Android, but me talking about you highlighting everyone in the group chat who has an Android, somehow I'm the jerk. Okay, so that's the game we're going to play, and we really haven't grown up out of grade school. 40 years old, and apparently parents still act like they did in junior high. Cool. That's what we're going to do. Awesome. Dave Burns, I said free market, and I knew he was going to react. Quote, free for the free market. McCorkerin, one time I was contracting for an ad agency and they put me in their social media department. Out of 17 people in the department, I was the only one without an iPhone. Some of that has opened up in Hollywood. Again, it's about fashion and it's about being brand label conscious. I would go to set and I would have my, I would have my Razer laptop and I would be the only one there. You would see a sea of Apple logos and then this one little Razer laptop there. Increasingly, one of the things I'm seeing a lot more, well, first of all, I'm seeing a ton of iPads. So a lot of people have moved from MacBooks in their coffee shops writing their screenplays to iPads. But increasingly, I'm seeing a ton of Surfaces here. The Surface has taken over as a very chic, popular image to present as a, you know, sort of a Hollywood content creator, writer kind of machine. You'll see a lot of those here in your local Starbucks. You know, that also kind of reminds me. This was a little while ago, but I was working a job where it was this little boutique accessories manufacturer, and I was helping them out on a shoot. We were on set, and I really want to be careful here. I don't want to break too much about the company info, but essentially, they were making accessories that were trying to utilize the more advanced features on Android, and specifically, they were looking at some of the... This was, like, really fresh when One UI was coming out for Samsung. And they were trying to leverage some of those unique features in One UI to make hardware that would kind of improve, like not just decks, but also some of the good lock style customizations and stuff, and hardware specifically for that. And they told me this story where they're sitting in front of international Samsung PR, Samsung project managers, and they're trying to pitch, like, hey, we want to make these, we feel we could make something, we want to go through the process of making this like an officially licensed Samsung style solution and accessory. And he's looking out at all of the Samsung executives that he's talking to, and they all have iPhones. And they don't know anything at all about the Samsung software that they're trying to make hardware for. So instead of just pitching, the entire session, he wasted all of his time in the session just like, okay, well, on a Samsung phone, if you do this and this, you can add this feature. And they're kind of nodding along and nodding along. And then you can plug in a USB cable. Oh, yeah, okay, so that's different than a Lightning connector. Okay, I see what you're doing. And then that cocks to another accessory just like your laptop. Oh, okay, well, but if we do that, is there a way that we can do that and sell more Samsung laptops? You're like, oh, okay. You don't know what your own products can do, and the business model works against the best features of your flagship phone, so you don't even really want to market that. Awesome. That's great. So, right, it's just kind of an ongoing conversation. I know I live in this little safety bubble where the majority of my family are on Androids. The majority of, like, my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister, we're all on Androids. My brother's wife has an old, beat-up iPhone, and she just doesn't care about phone stuff. So it's just she's the one that breaks all of our family group chats. But then my extended family has a whole bunch of iPhones. And again, we get these, like, minorly passive-aggressive reactions, like, you know, I respond to something and I see the little response emojis, then they respond to something and it's so-and-so liked a photo. And you're like, I know for a fact that they're not getting the better experience. I know for a fact they're upset that they're seeing the little text replies, so-and-so laughed at an image. But I don't get that. Google fixed that for me. So my experience is better, but they don't know how their experience is broken because of Apple. And that's the big pushback that I think a lot of sort of techies need to make in this conversation, is showing when you adopt standards, this is better for everybody. When you break things and make it proprietary, which we're going to be talking about some of Apple's business moves with USB-C and how the EU is stomping on that, but the tone of the coverage on that is those regulators trying to hurt Apple, when we know that really it's Apple trying to do something horrifically anti-consumer. It's hilarious. Ah, Aditya. So again, I don't want to tell people not to use things that they won't like, but I also feel like people don't really understand what the differences are these days. Aditya says, I'm the only one in my family on Android. Lil Bro watched Juan and TK and is kind of sold on a Pixel, and because I'm a Sony shill, he wants to try the 10 series. That could be kind of fun. That could be really fun. Farhan, I still remember the sheer reaction of my friends who only use iPhone when I plug in my Note 8 and use Dex. It's completely priceless. And it's funny watching people kind of move that stuff around. Like, for me, I feel like Dex is this great crown jewel killer feature. Ready for. My dirty little secret right now, I have all these amazing phones on my desk, and my SIM card is back in the Moto Edge Plus, and I really love Ready for. So now I'll go out and shoot on phones with better cameras, and then share that footage to my Ready for, and then use this as the computer. What does all the work on that footage? It's real nice. I real like it, especially because it also has a ton of storage. So I keep kind of moving back and forth. I would probably be doing that with the Xperia 1 if the Xperia 1's desktop mode hadn't been borked by Android 13. Android 13, even the minimalist, super basic Android desktop mode, totally dead. So now it's, all right, let me move all this stuff around. Oh, Ready for is so nice. I love it so much. But yeah, it's interesting because those are the types of features and functions that should be on mid-rangers. We only ever got a proper solid desktop mode on the LG Velvet. Desktop modes won't take off until they reach consumers who will actually benefit from that kind of mixed mode computing. You put Dex on a $1,200 Galaxy phone, and that is a consumer who likely already has a couple other screens in their home. But internationally, that could be a good reason to spend a little bit more on a gadget. But $1,200 US, when that might be someone's only computer, that's a no-go. That's never going to happen. But if you could have like sort of a OnePlus 11, move it on down to something in the Poco series, like a Poco F series, and that would make a lot of sense. Someone whose only compute platform that they can afford has to be their wirelessly cell phone connected device, and then they could plug that into another screen or a TV and have a truer desktop grade experience. And these mid-ranger chips are insane. We're already seeing mid-ranger chips. The 778 is in the ballpark of an 855. We're seeing the 7 Plus Gen 2 or 7 Gen 2. I can't even remember what Qualcomm is going to be labeling it. And that looks like it's going to be almost as powerful as last year's 8 Gen 1. It's so frustrating to see that amount of horsepower. But all it's for is like scrolling through your social medias so you can open your apps. That's what you need a more powerful phone for, so you can open up your apps faster. I almost said your faps aster. And then I said it. Yeah. Well, so this is the problem. From Cedric says, I was crushed to hear about the Xperia losing the extended screen mode with Android 13. I'm waiting for Moto's next phone, I guess. It didn't lose it. It's just broken. And I hope it can be fixed, but that's what's frustrating, is it's still there. The Android 13 still has the extended alternate view mode when you connect it. So if your phone has video output from the USB-C port, it will send an image to the monitor that you connect it to, but then the app drawer is broken. Literally, that's what it is. It's just the UI has somehow borked between Android 11 and Android 13. And Sony used to have one of the best flavors of that on Android 12, so this is a Google issue. This is not a manufacturer issue. But you can still use your Xperia with video out. So some of that functionality still maintains, but it's obnoxious using such a wide cinema view. Like, you have a lot of letterboxing, but you can still do it. But it's such a bummer that we can't even do full screen apps in 16:9. That should be a no-brainer. And I wish Sony could address that, but really that's not Sony's deal. That's Google trying to sell tablets and Chromebooks, just like Samsung executives using iPhones, not understanding One UI, wanting to sell more Samsung laptops. No good. Onscon, is the Android 13 desktop mode broken on the ZTE Axon 40 Ultra? So my Axon hasn't gotten Android 13. You know what? While we're doing the podcast here, I'll fire it up again. Oh, it might not be charged. I was shooting on it pretty heavy. We'll let it boot up and we'll see if it still has any battery. I checked a couple weeks ago. I haven't gotten Android 13 on this thing yet, so I don't know what that might be about. So we'll see. Ha ha. Okay. Why don't we? So that was most of housekeeping. I did some stuff on the Patreon too. We can kind of move on because we've got a really crazy news block here, and everything that we're going to be talking about, all of the links, all of the housekeeping, all of the subreddit plugs, everything will be available on my home site, somegadgetguide.com, for this week's episode. I would highly encourage also checking out the website on this episode, just because each one of these links is kind of following up and also sort of expanding on stories that we've been covering over the last couple months. Dang, Juan is on top of the comments after a couple of weeks of some big time lag. Oh, I'm going to fall way behind. As soon as I actually get into the articles, you guys know I'm not going to be keeping up with y'all, right? Wait, there was a Google Play system update. I've got my Axon right here. I just want to see real quick. And I'm going to fall behind the chat. See, you guys are making fun of me now. Look what happens. Look what you did, Aditya. Look what you did. System update. Nope. Software up to date. Not you can see that, yeah. Software up to date. Let me try one more time. So, yeah, I've got to check and see if there's maybe a side load that I can do, if there's a MyOS 12. A MyOS 13. But my Axon is not updating, so I don't know. It's been so good, though. The Axon, I've been shooting a lot. Sort of mixing and matching Sony and Axon footage for 4K 120 is pretty nice. All right. Quick, chat faster, says Muppinish. Hit me with your best chat. Why don't you hit me with your best chat? Immediately, right off the bat, starting off our news block, we can follow up on a story that I think we talked about it last week. My brain is Swiss cheese. I literally can't remember from week to week what we've talked about. I have notes. I never read them. But we did talk about this recently in the past, and South Korea pulls a U-turn on the 69-hour working week after youth backlash. This is coming by way of The Guardian, written up by Justin McCurry in Tokyo. The government had intended to raise the maximum weekly working time to 69 hours after business groups complained that the current cap of 52-hour work weeks was making it difficult to meet deadlines. But protests from the country's millennials and Gen Z prompted the president, Yoon Suk-yeol, I don't know how to say Y-E-O-L, Yol, to order government agencies to reconsider the measure and communicate better with the public, especially with Generation Z and millennials. Quote, the core of Yoon's labor market policy is to protect the rights and interests of underprivileged workers, such as the MZ generation, workers not in a union and those working in small and medium-sized businesses. This was a terrible plan. It was obviously going to be met with a pretty visceral backlash, and I love that business leaders and people at the heads of these corporations are trying to make it out like, oh, but those millennials, oh, gee darn, we're not meeting our deadlines. And you're like, you're already working them 52 hours a week. That's a standard working week in South Korea. And I'm sure there are laws in place on how you can cap overtime. That's why they wanted to extend to a 69-hour week. I doubt it's a worker productivity problem. So again, this is an example. South Korea, what did we say last week? South Korea has something like under 20% or under 15% of their labor market has access to any type of organized labor. So union membership is something ridiculously low. And you can see that in the policy proposed by business leaders to the South Korean government. Again, the relationship between corporations and the South Korean government seems pretty well entwined and entrenched. I didn't put it as an article, but there was another article about Samsung over 10 years is going to invest like $200 billion in South Korean chip fabrication and foundries. And if I remember correctly, this was sort of the investment that was offered as the trade for a Samsung executive to be let out of prison for bribing elected officials, including the former South Korean president. So it was a little quid pro quo, you know, like, hey, if you want Samsung to invest in the local economy, you should let this dude out of jail. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a business transaction between corporations and governments. Totally fine. And now we're getting the headlines that Samsung is going to be increasing their chip fab there. So it's pretty great. Pretty awesome. Certainly nothing could go wrong with Samsung components and phones, right? Certainly Samsung isn't lying about their TV performance, their camera performance, their benchmarking performance. What could go wrong with them having such a vice grip over the South Korean economy? It's better for business than it's just better for all of the people, right?
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Oh, Ted, I'll put that comment up. Ever since mob activities died down, businesses have acted out living their best lives to the detriment of employees. I recently went and binged all the Godfather movies again. And you're like, yeah, that kind of plays. Certain expectations on what their contributions to political campaigns are supposed to net them. We should move on. All right. So this is a terribly formatted article, but we did get a little bit of a kick out of this on the Patreon. I don't know. Did I share this? I don't remember if I shared this. This is coming by way of thecooldown.com, written up by Becca Inglis. Excuse me. Researchers have created tiny fairy-like robots that could replace dying bumblebees, quote, superior to its natural counterparts. So instead of trying to fix our climate issues and shore up the population of bees, which are a necessary component in the food chain to ensure farming and fruits and vegetables can keep growing, a bunch of folks making robots are saying, hey, we can make a better bumblebee than the bumblebee. And there is a cool photo. I mean, it looks like this little fairy-winged fiber sort of butterfly thing, which is pretty cool.
But I also feel like instead we should maybe just look at how can we stop killing off all the bumblebees? And that would probably be better for the entire food chain and agricultural chain, especially, like, you know, we talk about things like we're going to try and hyper isolate. What does a bee do? A bee flies from flower to flower, spreading pollen, and that helps plants grow. Cool. Let's make a robot that does that. And in a lab, it's going to perform so much better. We can show you how a bee has this sort of chaotic flight plan, but here we can tell our robots, go to these other flowers, and they can, like, strategically, perfectly pollinate all these flowers. And you're like, awesome. What about when it's windy? Do they work as effectively? I don't know. What about when it rains? Do they work as effectively? Who knows? What about when other animals try to eat them? Will they kill the animals that try to eat them? Because bees also are a component in the food chain where other predators are trying to eat them. Also, bees make honey. These little fairy-winged robots aren't going to do that. So, again, I feel like we were joking about, like, hey, we haven't really tried actually fixing the problem, but now we're already jumping over the agricultural and environmental issues and going straight to, I don't know, maybe we could build a robot. If all the bees are going to die, that's their free market choice. You know, if you want bees to participate in the free market, then they need to know that if they just all die, then they can't make more pollen and honey. And that's their free market choice. So instead, what we should do is make a free market alternative to the bee. And I'm making this joke a lot just because it's been popping up in so many conversations, and it's such a dumb point. Anytime someone's like, but your free market choice is, if you don't like the way that Apple does business, you can go and buy a basic flip phone. That's what you're free. You can exercise your choice. That's a choice. Free market. And you just want to take that person and just stooge slap them until they, like, eat pudding or something. I don't have a good chain of events on that. I don't really know how that's supposed to play out. Gormlord. Replacing animals with machines worked in Horizon Zero Dawn. I don't see what the problem is. Oh, man. Juan, you're running the cyberpunk dystopia tropes people seem to enjoy. I think you mean ruining. I'm ruining the cyberpunk dystopia tropes. I wanted cool cyborg human augmentation. I just didn't want all of the dystopian fallout to come. But apparently we can't have both. Apparently we can't have the functional Star Trek-like society and the cool robot augmentation at the same time. I wanted Geordi LaForge cybernetics, and it doesn't seem like we'll get that. Instead, it seems like we're barreling towards Horizon and Terminator as a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It's lame. See, yeah, Onscon, this is cool, but I think it's only going to work in controlled, what do you call that? Greenhouses. Onscon says, as a person with a phobia of bees, I have to say that this new mecha bee looks both adorable and gorgeous at the same time, because it looks like a little fairy butterfly. And that's awesome. I mean, I'm not discounting the incredible technology that we see here. If we could make, like, a swarm of these little fairy things, I think it would look amazing. I just very much doubt that they are superior to their natural counterparts. I feel like that's a headline built on the marketing. Speaking of headlines built on really gross marketing and behavior algorithms, this one is kind of funny. BuzzFeed, after gutting its newsroom, asks reporters to produce even more, written up by Charlotte Klein. And I'd like you to also just kind of take a page through this. This article isn't very long, but it's piggybacking on the Journal, and I think there was another publication, Hollywood Reporter. Hold on. BuzzFeed's news division has been repeatedly battered. Buyouts last spring saw the site's acclaimed investigations team, as well as its science, politics, and inequality verticals gutted. Top editors, including the site's then editor-in-chief, Mark Scoofs, departed. To make matters worse, toward the end of 2022, founder and chief executive Jonah Peretti announced even more cuts. though neither BuzzFeed News nor HuffPost, which BuzzFeed also owns, were impacted by those layoffs. According to the Wall Street Journal, BuzzFeed's roughly 100-person newsroom downsized by about 40% in the last year. So all of the reasons why this is going to be bad, there are 10 reasons why this is going to be bad, and I think number 7 is going to blow your mind. BuzzFeed annihilates their newsroom. Destroys. I'm trying to think of the other adjectives that we associate with terrible clickbait articles. But no, it's a pretty rough look as we look at organizations and we look at companies trying to replace the low effort listicle or the keyword SEO generated article. You don't need a human writing those, because even when humans were, that was such low priority, low effort churn content just to clog your search engines. You can send that to ChatGPT. I know a lot of people are like, oh, but then the journalistic integrity and the fact checking. And you're like, humans weren't really fact checking or being super integrity-ish. I was going to say weren't being integral, but that's the wrong word. I was trying to morph the word integrity into another type of adjective. This is lame. But again, I think this is going to be, again, the further squeeze that we see as we watch the impacts of these machine learning language model algorithms kind of take over what the low effort work was. I was talking to a producer and editor a couple weeks ago, a friend's birthday party, and we're still friends with a lot of people in the industry. And he was really kind of funnily bullish on like AI modeling for images. And he's like, I know a lot of people are going to be mad, but once we train on content, once we train these models, it is going to seriously disrupt things like stock video clips and stock photography. But how many, you know, like Valentine's Day images of a rose in a champagne glass do you really need to shoot? Now that we know generally what a rose looks like and champagne flutes look like and a box of chocolates, what they all look like, from clip art to actual photographs of that, why are humans still so heavily invested in making that some kind of a career augmentation? So you get rid of that and an AI image machine learning model can just kind of take over. Hey, I need an image of a late 80s sedan, generic looking, but kind of boxy. And boom, now you've got it. You don't have to airbrush out a Ford logo on a boxy car from the 80s. It's just this new thing that doesn't really exist, but it kind of exists, and you can kind of use that in any way that you want. He was really excited about kind of streamlining and reducing all of that work there. But it is going to disrupt a whole bunch of people that were a part of that churn and making that kind of content. So it's a really messy situation, but I really feel a lot of places have kind of, they've missed the opportunity to give the BuzzFeed story the BuzzFeed headline. The top 7 reasons BuzzFeed is laying off their writers. Again, listicles work, and BuzzFeed proved that. So what could be better than a BuzzFeed listicle about BuzzFeed? Pretty great. Dave Burns, is this true? Meanwhile, Teen Vogue has some of the best labor and science reporters on staff. Is that accurate, or are you just being funny? Because if Teen Vogue does have, like, Gen Z-focused conversations about environmentalism and corporate responsibility, I'll start reading Teen Vogue. I will subscribe tomorrow. We were joking about me still liking Lord last week. I guess I'm also going to be on board Teen Vogue. I'm going to be on board Teen Vogue. Oh, so bad. Oh yeah, McCorkin, a year ago, everyone was talking about crypto and NFTs. Now anyone talks about is AI. I wonder what the next trend will be. Again, what we're seeing with the investing market, I saw this whole documentary on like what the responsibility of the Fed is. And you're like, this is just pump and dump scam after pump and dump scam after pump and dump scam. It's like, hey, we got this new thing. let's pour a ton of angel investor money in it. Now let's see if we can get a bunch of other investors excited about it, and then let's rug pull so that we can move on to the next thing. And now that that focus isn't on crypto, we're starting to see, like, Bitcoin is high again. I think they just hit 25. Remember when Bitcoin was dropping under 18,000, we were like, okay, there is a certain floor to Bitcoin where the entire thing completely unravels. And I know for a fact that people were pouring money into Bitcoin to try and buoy it, like buffer it. And now Bitcoin has started climbing back up again with all of these news of these banks failing. And I think they just hit 20. The Muppinish is saying they hit 28. Oh, man. So, yeah, like all of this stuff needs much closer examination over longer periods of time. There needs to be like a regulatory market to make crypto boring. And when crypto is boring, then it will be useful. When it's exciting, that's where I think a lot of people are going to get hurt. Muppinish, man, going up fast. That makes me concerned because, again, in light of bad banking news, people are going to seek out alternatives. And if there's another bubble and burst, a lot of people are going to get double hurt. They were hurt by SVB and all these other investing resources starting to crater and collapse. And then they're going to get hurt by trying to avoid it by going to crypto. Because I bet you there are people who are like, hey, when my Bitcoin hits 30 again, that's when I'm going to pull my cash back out because that's when I invested in. And that way I can move my money into another market or something like that. And again, that feels like a bubble bust, another rug pull. So bad. Yeah, Fungi. I people keep making fun of me, but Solar Power was a great album. Fungi also likes Lord, so I'm not alone. So there you go. Solar Power was a great album. I'll die on that hill. Every week. Every week we're going to have Lord appreciation. My daughter... Oh, I forgot to... So I was going to make my daughter's playlist public. I'll do that. It's on Kobuz. We're at like 40, 41 or 42 songs. My daughter's taste in female singer pop is very sophisticated for a 7-year-old. We're very excited about like the playlist that she put together. But there are 2 tracks from Lord. And I'm like, yeah, daddy's love is conditional and you have won it again for another week. Woo! That's not what I told her. I promise I don't treat my daughter like that. Moving right along, it's bad when companies lie. And it's bad when companies misrepresent their products. And companies that are caught making consumer transactions more difficult and misrepresenting the quality of those transactions should face penalties and fines. It doesn't matter what company that is. The fact that I've just spelled that out there, how many people think I'm talking about like a phone manufacturer? How many people think I'm talking about maybe another organization or piece of software development or something like that? That is a very common refrain that I've thrown at specific smartphone manufacturers, right? So immediately folks are going to get defensive about, oh, but you hate these companies. Consumer abuse is always wrong, and we should hold companies that make the most money on those styles of abuse to the highest legal standards. So this story at once sounds like some justice. I feel it is not. I saw this first from NME.com, their gaming news department, written up by Andy Brown. Fortnite studio hit with £201 million fine and ordered to stop tricking players. So this is a British publication, I'm assuming, because it's $245 million fine. So for once, a United States regulator jumped in. The United States Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, has hit Fortnite developer Epic Games with a $245 million fine due to the company allegedly letting children rack up unauthorized charges without any parental involvement. The FTC claimed that Epic used design tricks to get players of all ages to unintentionally make in-game purchases using real money with, quote, counterintuitive, inconsistent, and confusing button configuration, end quote, that led to unwanted purchases. This is the thing that I always get really bristly about, because years ago, I was making videos about loot boxes in gaming, and one, I would get a lot of pushback. Well, if you can't stand the heat, don't stand in the kitchen. You know, like, people that just want to stand for something that they like. You like games that have Star Wars characters in them. I guess you need to support a terrible game built on ridiculously punitive gambling mechanics for a family-friendly franchise, and you refuse to see that this is like hitting that dopamine button that we regulate on slot machines, right? There is a Las Vegas gambling authority that goes in and audits casinos to make sure they're not screwing with people playing slot machines. We now live in an algorithmically based world where if a casino wanted to, they could keep someone on the hook significantly longer on a slot machine. They can ramp up just enough wins to kind of keep you pumping, and then they can slow that down to frustrate you, and then it only takes a little bit of social manipulation to keep you just pouring money. This is a very well-understood business tactic for gambling, to the point where we regulate against it. But now we turn to a video game, and people are like, I don't know, if you don't want to spend money on it, then just don't, because you're not a free market guy. Again, I'm going to make fun of people that support these things. Like, if you don't want to participate in modern society and the free market, then you can just go live in a shack. You know, like, that is insufficient. There are reasons why we regulate against these business practices. And we're like, yeah, okay, I believe Epic. If you ever tried like going through buying skins or subscribing to seasons or anything like that, it is a horrifically frustrating endeavor going into a game as service or a free seasons-based game and trying to interact with whatever economy that game has. I flamed out on a couple of mobile games. I still hold up Marvel Future Fight as being a horrific example of intro and early game is really fun. You get into it. You start unlocking all these characters. You start building them up. You start getting into a clan or some kind of guild. And then that, you know, sort of enhances the collaborative gameplay. And then you try to get to end game, and there are hundreds of characters. And if you want to rank up every character, it's going to cost you thousands and thousands of dollars to stay on the track of whatever the meta is for every part of a season that they release new characters. I feel that is irresponsible of Disney to put their label of a family-friendly franchise on a game like that. Because there's the expectation that that's going to be played by adults and kids. It's Marvel. It's comic books. And on top of that, there's no incentive to change that business model because a couple whales pretty much fund the development of the game, and then all of the accruing other transactions are just the icing on that whale cake. And Google doesn't have any... Oops. I just turned on 5 different phones by saying Google. Okay. And G doesn't have any motivation to change that business practice either, because they get 30% of every transaction that happens on their platforms. So it's win-win-win for them, but then you've got kids that are taught this is how games work. Games work by you hitting a brick wall and then throwing money at the problem until you get what you want. And all of that is still built on a gambling mechanic. So we got rid of loot boxes, right? We all started celebrating, no more loot boxes. You don't give money to the company and get a digital box that opens and randomly things come out of it. So gaming was fixed. We got rid of the loot box. But in-game currencies and in-game materials still employ the same random number generator mechanic. It's still a slot machine. So I use Future Fight because this was the last game that I actually put some money into. I would regularly pay for their monthly, like, little bonus pack of gems and jewels and materials. I really loved this game until they started hard putting the squeeze on their end game. the first couple of years that it was out, it was actually pretty fair. If you spent monthly, you would get enough of a bump that you could grind to keep up with whatever the top meta of the game was. Then it was like, okay, well, if you spend a couple bucks monthly, I think their monthly pack was like $4.99 or $3.99, something like that. So then it became, you spend your monthly pack, then maybe you augment with some jewel purchases, and then you can keep up with the meta. And in the last year that I was playing it, it went from like your monthly pack kept you afloat to you would have to spend hundreds on each character to rank them up. So why is that? They didn't use loot boxes. There must have been something else wrong with the game. So here's what Marvel Future Fight would do. You would rank up your character, get them to their top rank. Then they would have weapons, equipment, uniforms, and each one of those needed to be ranked up separately from the main character. Each one of those items would use different materials to rank them up. So you would have to grind in missions to get those materials. So then each upgrade for your weapon, you know, weapon level 1 takes 10 units of material. Okay, that's pretty easy. Except that it's not just 1-to-1. It's not that I got 10 units of material and now I get to upgrade my weapon. It's I'm going to spend 2 units and it's going to be random how much those 2 units of material upgrade the weapon. So I put in 2 units and it goes up 1%. Well, that's not enough to upgrade my weapon. Let me put in 2 more units. This time it went up 20%. So now my weapon is at 21% of its way to the upgrade. Let me put in 2 more units. Ah, I got another 1%. Now I'm at 22%. And so you keep playing this game on every single weapon, every single uniform, every single article, every single power-up. And every time, it's random. And sometimes you'll put in your 2 units on the very first try, and you'll get the full upgrade. Now, when you want to go from level 1 to level 2, that's a 20. So you double the amount of upgrade material you'll need. This is so hard to quantify because, like, when you're in the game and you're just quickly going through all of your characters, it becomes muscle memory. I need to do this, upgrade, 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 upgrade. Oh, I finally got the weapon upgrade. Now let me go back and play part of the game. My Captain America is stronger and more powerful. So instead of one loot box that just unlocked a character, every single character, weapon, uniform, skin, aspect of the ranking is now randomized. Every single part of it is a random number generator slot machine. Marvel Future Fight has, I believe now, has almost 200 characters in the game that each individually need to be ranked and upgraded. Their weapons get better when you put on a different skin or a uniform. There are different like evolution tiers. You can go from like a tier 1 character to like a tier 3 character. They start getting godly powerful. And if you want to be able to participate, you need a roster, a really healthy roster, so that you can go into these zones. And the player versus player maps are awesome. There's this whole like map game where it's kind of like playing Risk, but with your Marvel characters in the multiverse. It's great. It is really fun. And I had a great time with the clan that I was a part of. But keeping up with that clan was insane. There were dudes there spending thousands on that game. I'm not that guy. So Epic, to bring this all the way back, Epic was tagged by the FTC, and they were fined $245 million. And on the surface, that sounds like, okay, that's good. A regulator went after a company and said, your business practices were anti-consumer, were abusive, and they were also targeted at children, not being able to understand the mechanics of real money in how you've presented your product. How much do we want to believe that Epic profited from these types of business practices? Do we think they made $500 million on Fortnite over the period of time that they were engaged in this kind of behavior manipulation? Do we think it was $1 billion? Do we think it was 2? At some point, there is someone inside of Epic who's saying, hey, if we change up these menus, we get a better return on players giving us more money. So I don't believe for a second that they're not aware. They were completely unaware of how these menus affected their click-through rate on additional purchases. So there's got to be a number somewhere in Epic's offices that says, we made X amount more per month on these business practices than these business practices. And I'm sure they were experimenting all along the way. So the FTC comes in and says, hey, we're going to do the justice. And the justice is $245 million. And I don't believe for a second that that's anything more than a light slap on the wrist for years of consumer harm. And that's where I get real bristly, because this, we should be able to look at that. We can look at this and say, well, this is bad. We're not penalizing companies for engaging in these business practices. I want to see, like, just real quick. Let's see. I'm just going to randomly put into Bing, how much money did Epic make in 2021? Let's see, from Statista.com. I want to, oh, no, don't do the cookie consent pop-up. Oh, come on. So in 2020, they did $5.1 billion. 2021, they did $5.7 billion, and projected earnings in 2022, $6.27 billion. $6.27 billion. So $245 million, man, that's some justice. They could eat that whole fine in the 0.27 of the $6 billion that they made in 2022. Or I guess the projected earnings, technically the earnings aren't completed yet for 2022. Yeah, and McCorkran, I completely agree. Epic probably factored in losing some money via fine or class action lawsuit as part of the shady business practices. They don't care at all. And so we can all nod along. This is bad. We should address it. We need regulators to have bigger teeth in this fight to really make these kinds of business practices undesirable. Epic is kind of an easy target for that. Even if you're really into Fortnite or other Epic games and properties and their tool sets for making video games, they're not the mostest popular, fluffy, consumer-friendly company. So we all go, yeah, that's right. This also needs to happen with Apple and Samsung. This also needs to happen with Google. This also needs to happen with Amazon. This also needs to happen with every other major corporation that gets caught engaged in some kind of consumer harm. Like Amazon Marketplace needs this kind of scrutiny, but with an extra zero or two at the end of the fines that are being leveraged for these kinds of shady business practices. Or carriers, or ISPs, or, again, anyone that has significant control over an aspect of that part of the economy, they need to be scrutinized to a much higher degree. $6.27 billion in 1 year. Yeah, $245 million fine seems insufficient to me. Sveticus. Agreed. Those penalties are from the Gilded Age, where a million was worth way more. $1 million. I have not watched that movie in a really long time. I need to catch it. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time. We got to wrap up the news block, and this is the last story here coming into the news block. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I just feel for people. A lot of creators are going to get pissy with me because of how we monetize traffic, how we make money on videos. I would really appreciate it on platforms like YouTube if you're inclined to spend that time, if you can watch ads, if you're subscribed to YouTube Premium, awesome. But I also want to acknowledge we are in rampant inflation. Daily household goods are getting more and more expensive. And currently, even with YouTube Premium, I don't believe YouTube in the app is really giving their viewers the best experience to consume content. my dirty little secret, I prefer watching YouTube in a browser like Firefox. And I would encourage other people to look at browsers like Firefox that help you compartmentalize your data tracking. So you make a little bucket where all of the data that YouTube might have access to only lives in that one browser tab, only with your behavior on YouTube. And if you log out of YouTube, I think when you search, you get a better representation of topics than when you're signed into YouTube, where YouTube tries to manipulate what content it thinks you want to see. And then on top of that, the browser functions better. I really like listening to longer videos on YouTube, kind of like a podcast. Can't do that in the YouTube app unless you're paying for premium. I am using less bandwidth. I am saving YouTube money. I can stream at a significantly lower quality. And the only way for me to get that and benefit YouTube is to pay for that. And I viscerally disagree with that business model. I'm doing YouTube a solid by only listening to their videos. They should be kicking me some kind of consideration for me using less of their bandwidth. And I can get that in a desktop or in a mobile browser. I can't get that as easily, literally going through their app. I have a big problem with that. So YouTube Premium, they just jacked up their prices. A couple members of our Discord were talking about, like, it got a lot more expensive, especially for the family plan. On top of that, we've also seen YouTube bump up their YouTube TV prices. YouTube TV is now $72.99 a month. $73 a month. Just under $900 a year for a cable-style TV replacement plan. It's mostly live broadcast or VOD, so you get all the advertisements that are baked into the channels. So YouTube doesn't have any control over ads on YouTube TV. YouTube TV is just like cable TV. So whatever CBS is showing live at that time, it's going to have commercials. Or if you want to go back and catch a show that you forgot to record, the cloud DVR on YouTube TV was great. I loved it. I really loved it when YouTube TV was $35 a month. I'm loving it a lot less now that YouTube TV is $73 a month. But none of those ads, that's not YouTube TV's fault. It's live TV. So it's not like YouTube can, like, warp time to get you around ads. And same thing, the VOD service comes from the content supplier. So let's say AMC. I hated waiting for Better Call Saul. So I would go to YouTube TV, but then the AMC VOD would be available for the East Coast. So I'd sit through the VOD ads, because that was a part of what AMC served. But I would do that because I wanted to watch Better Call Saul earlier than getting it live for the West Coast. Barry Johnson. $72.99 gives a new meaning to cutting the cord. Yeah, we've gotten to the point where cord cutting, we've peaked. The golden age of cord cutting is gone. So Marie and I really sat down and we looked at our finances. You know, if you've been following the podcast, recently we also reduced our Netflix use. Hold on one second, I'm going to take another drink of coffee here.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Juan, thank you for the honor of having me on your podcast to kind of let everybody know that I do what's called Engineer Reacts. I react to smartphones, and you can find these reactions at www.youtube.com/C/Barry Johnson. I do about 1 to 2 video reactions per week, all on smartphone tech. Also, in addition to this, I'm actually going to start posting on Easy Computer Solutions channel as well, as he just has so much product that he tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, I need a little bit of help over there as well. So again, Juan, I appreciate it and hope you have a great rest of the podcast.
So we went from the UHD 4 screen plan. Now we're on the most basic ad-free 720p version of Netflix. My daughter is the one who watches the most Netflix now. It has not impacted her ability to watch Netflix at all. And I still get to get some of those Netflix games. Like Dust in Neon was a really fun little romp. I'm glad I had Netflix. I could play it for, I could play it not for free, but included with the price of our Netflix subscription. So we are now spending half as much per year with Netflix as we were previously. That's not great, but it's an improvement. YouTube TV, we finally broke down, like, these are the things that we watch a lot. Most of our live was actually news. Both Marie and I would sit down and watch, like, morning news, local news, stuff like that. You can get that directly from the websites of those channels. Like, if we want to watch KTLA, we can watch the KTLA live feed directly from KTLA.com. I used to do a lot of production work and hosting for Fox, the local Fox affiliate. I can watch that. My Fox LA. I can just go right there. Why are we spending, why are we going to spend $73 a month when the most that we watch is on that? And then there were some other, like, occasionally we'd like some Resident Alien. We really liked that show on Sci-Fi. So that would be kind of YouTube TV fodder. But for $73 a month, maybe we could just buy individual episodes of the shows that we were watching on networks and on cable and still come out way ahead. We're not spending almost $1,000 a month. We're not getting that kind of value out of YouTube TV. It makes zero sense. So much of our viewing behavior is the other streaming services and the other packages that we're on. We do a month with HBO Max. Great, we can catch up on all those shows. Then we'll do a month on Hulu, cycle through that. Now I'm thinking maybe we'll try and convince our daughter to, like, flip her Netflix usage so that we can turn it off for a couple of months out of the year. Live TV? No. You're kidding me. No, we're not going to play that game. And especially, like, when a cable TV subscription is back down to, like, $60 a month. Has a few, like, we're on Spectrum. I don't want to give Spectrum any more money. But if we did Spectrum's TV app, I think it would be $60 a month on top of our internet connection. And it would have a few fewer channels than YouTube TV, but it would have all the channels that we watch. And I can't pick and choose on YouTube TV. It's $73 a month minimum and goes up if we want to add 4K. So it's $80 a month, $81 a month if I want YouTube TV in 4K. And that's just silly. That's just dumb at that point. So we canceled our YouTube TV subscription. We're really looking at trying to focus in and pay for the things that we're really using and cut off the services that we're not getting the value out of. I think if we were bigger into live sports, because Marie and I are very passive with our sports fandom. I like watching club soccer, club football. She really likes watching tennis, but not so much that it's like the defining aspect of what we'll watch over the weekend. Oh, yeah, there's that, you know, Wimbledon. Oh, we got to sit down and watch all the games. Like, if it's on, she's got it on. If she misses it, she'll catch the highlights. It's never been the driving force. So those are, to me, some of the main reasons why you stick with live broadcast. But here, Marie is a massive Dodgers fan, but Major League Baseball has tied up all of its licensing and distribution in these obnoxious individual purchases and plans and packages. So we can't watch Dodgers games here unless we pay for a silly Major League Baseball subscription. So we just don't watch Dodgers games. Like, it is so dumb. Instead of getting some money from us on something that would be more reasonable, it's like the whole MLB package, and, like, I don't want that. We don't need that. If I could just get feeds for Red Sox games and she could just get feeds for Dodgers games, we'd be great. But there's no way for us to do that. The last time we paid for an MLB plan was the last year that Vince Scully was calling Dodgers games. And so we got to watch the last game that Vince Scully called for the Dodgers. And it was really emotional. It was great. It was amazing. That was baseball, Los Angeles baseball at its peak, at its brightest. Loved it. I'm so glad that we did that and we could experience that. We've not spent another dime baseball game since then. Instead, we're going to look at all that money that we would have spent on like an MLB TV package, and we're going to spend a lot less of that to go and take Lex to her first Dodgers game. And I feel like that's going to be a way better experience and way better value for our money, just going to one Dodgers game, buying all the snacks, buying the overpriced beer. We're going to do that instead. It's so frustrating that this is the landscape that has been born out of the streaming wars. And instead of this really getting better for consumers, it's gotten way more expensive and kind of punitively so, as we're seeing other aspects of inflation hit consumers. I'm tying this all back together because I want to say find ways to support content creators, watch our stuff, but the passive view means very little. If there's a way that you can sit through some ads, great. I'm not going to say make that the linchpin of how you support content creators. Find other opportunities. Sharing content, if you don't have the money to buy things, is really helpful. The effort matters more than just, do you pay for YouTube Premium? Gimme, 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 gimme. If you can chip a buck, you know, hit my Patreon for a month and get all my camera deep dives. Catch up, then turn it off for the other 11 months out of the year. I feel my content is worth a dollar. If you want to keep up with some of the other performance testing and camera stuff, a buck. Okay, cool. I feel like that is a reasonable transaction between the two of us. I greatly appreciate the people who chip in $2 or more, and I'm going to add you to my list of credits at the end of all my videos. Awesome. But these types of shenanigans where increasingly the platform is harming the relationship between content creators and their audiences is a bigger force in between my audience and me, taking more money out of the equation, making it significantly more difficult to keep viewership engaged. And they're also raising prices on everything, but the people who make the content for them aren't seeing the benefits of that. Them raising YouTube Premium prices means nothing to me as a content creator. It doesn't mean another dime in my pocket. It means their platform got more expensive for you, and I still don't think it's the best way to watch YouTube. I think the best way to watch YouTube is through a web browser. I also think the safest way to watch YouTube and not have all of your data tracked is through a web browser. From CopaCash, Google had to find a way to pay for that NBA sponsorship. Well, I feel like their NBA sponsorship should be going towards, should be paid for from all of the other phones that they're selling. If that's not built into the business model, I feel Google might be doing it wrong. Ron Guido saying MLB is, sorry, this is funny. MLB is free for T-Mobile Tuesday every year. But TED Talks Tech, can you befriend someone with T-Mobile who doesn't use the MLB TV package? I can just see Ted like, I would gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. All right. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no exception, and I absolutely dominated on my own subreddit this week. But that's usually not the case. Excuse me. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. This is a labor of love subreddit where the community here, we're engaged in trying to share content we feel deserves more attention. And hopefully, when stuff is popularized here, it expands, it becomes easier to find on other subreddits, and that can really help a content creator build viewership, find new audience. And then even if the content creator is really big, we want to highlight those videos that we feel deserve more attention. Every single time, like, we see a massive channel and they do a really good, like, investigative piece, something a little bit longer, a little bit meatier, a little bit more cerebral, YouTube poops all over it. And some of these conversations get really heady when we talk about, like, you know, phone testing or right to repair or net neutrality. We're probably going to lose net neutrality, our ability to win back net neutrality over the next year. If you've been following the news on the FCC, we don't have a full commission, so we can't vote on something like net neutrality. And all of the ISPs and cell phone carriers are making it very difficult to have a fair political conversation about that. It's just not happening. We can't get that appointment in place. So all of these conversations impact us down at the daily level, but it's difficult to get a good handle on that. So whenever a channel does really good work on that, the YouTube algorithm is not pushing that content. They're pushing the most popular stuff first, and then there's sort of a secondary market for better videos. We aim to try and circumvent the YouTube algorithm, and we've got a pretty healthy collection of people sharing content right now. On reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, the number one post was me doing something silly with my Razer Edge. So I got a question on my Razer Edge video if the Razer Edge supported Steam Link. And so I demonstrated that by Steam linking my Steam Deck to my Razer Edge. So if you want, you can run the game off of your Steam Deck and play the game on your Razer Edge. I'm totally doing mobile gaming the right way. It was a dumb thing to post. It won the subreddit this week. It was so stupid. It was such a dumb thing for me to post. But that took the top spot. And if everyone who's streaming this or watching this right now or listening to the replay went and voted on their favorite topics on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, then you would not see dopey posts like this take the top spot. So until more people get engaged and start supporting content creators putting out better stuff, I'm going to keep posting my stuff and getting all the points from it. So there you go. Onscon did post something from Rare Insults, and that actually made the number three. So Onscon took the number three spot. Number four was Random Frank P. I'm not familiar with this channel. 2.1 million subscribers. Another channel killed by the algorithm, ending the Random Frank P YouTube era. It's not him closing his channel. It just sounds like he's doing a channel rebrand. So the whole, like, YouTuber stoic face in the thumbnail, looking up to the heavens as I ponder my future on the platform. That's not what this video is at all. And then I also wanted to highlight this one posted by ER1980. I don't know if ER is still in the chat. Just kind of rounding out our top 10. Revive your Surface Pro 3 with Tiny 11. So this is Evnos or Evnos. I'm not sure how you pronounce that YouTube name. 66,000 subscribers. And Tiny 11 is this cute little resource for streamlining a Windows 11 build. And they're showing how you can improve the performance on an older machine by kind of streamlining the software on it. So that's actually a really great, helpful little video, a little tutorial on that. So let me get this up here. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. We always need more content to share. Like, I always highlight some of the top posts of every week, but we've got tons of stuff. And these are content creators that are really putting the work in. And they all deserve more attention. And literally just going and clicking a few little up arrows is the minimal amount of effort would mean a lot to helping to train the Reddit algorithm and popularizing that kind of content. So every week we're going to keep plugging it. And every week I hope we'll see some more people there. And also sharing outside of the subreddit. You can go to the subreddit, share directly to other social media services. So you see a video you really like, you push the little share button, you can immediately send that to another part of the social media web and help that creator out. That's what's going to make a bigger difference than you paying more for YouTube Premium. You paying more for YouTube Premium isn't going to help any of these people make videos, write articles, share photos, do comparative analysis, and really work on giving you better content. If you want better content, you've got to support it. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. So JMan150 says, hey, did you hear about GameSki leaving YouTube? And I have not. The last thing I saw from GameSki, he had just published. I mean, I watch some of his other reviews and stuff, but I have a huge backlog of YouTube videos to watch. But I wrote an editorial he had posted his I'm exhausted video, like a creator facing burnout video, shortly after Snubs. Shannon Morse also posted something very similar to her YouTube channel, just talking about how this last year was really rough. It was hard to find the momentum. Everything that happens from YouTube is kind of killing the joy of making videos on YouTube. And then Gameski turned right around and posted a very similar kind of heartfelt, I'm not learning, I'm repeating the same things over and over, I'll post an opinion on something and the comments are toxic. And Gamesky. I can't say it. In my brain, the first time I read the YouTube channel was Gameski. And I've never been able to let go of that. And now just saying it out loud, I'm saying it incorrectly. It's sort of the theme of my podcast. I say all names wrong. But he also went and posted something very similarly and heartfelt. I would not be terribly surprised if he took an extended break from YouTube and maybe never came back. I've been talking to my wife, like, it is very difficult to keep up this momentum and find the fun when literally everything from the platform is the worst it's ever been. And the thing that keeps me afloat is actually the Patreon, not because that is a financial investment, but because that has become a really fun, safe place for me to sort of read through comments and get tips and tricks on where to take my videos and my reviews. And it's so much more collaborative. That to me has become what I work for. And then the YouTube is just, that's what's got to be public. And I suffer the frustration of making those videos public. If I could paywall everything and only engage with people on the Patreon, I feel I'd be a much happier and healthier individual. But if he leaves, I don't think Shannon Morris is talking about leaving, but she's definitely putting way less effort. And then I don't know that Scott Peachy is going to be coming back. So technically speaking, this great YouTube channel, Scott is so knowledgeable and he's so much fun. He's such an engaging, self-effacing, charming topic host. And he's so good at bridging some of these conversations about things like privacy and security. And then he's very knowledgeable about sort of the consumer landscape. And he always sells himself short. He always acts like, well, I'm not the expert on any of this, but let me give you this really well thought out and informed opinion. And he tried bringing his YouTube channel back. YouTube slaughtered him. I mean, he was putting effort into standalone videos. He was doing weekly live streams. He was reaching out to the community. He was bringing on guests. All these things that YouTube says that you're supposed to do. And nothing. And like, no momentum on the channel at all. It didn't matter what kind of push he tried to give it. And so he's taking another extended break because of some other life issues. But I don't know that he'll want to come back. So we're talking about some of the best hosts and some of the most interesting conversations and digging a little bit deeper, those kinds of chats from people who are really passionate and engaged and knowledgeable about what they bring to the table. And YouTube is crushing them. It is horrific. I wrote up an article, an editorial on the Patreon as just part of my production diary. I think I've actually done three now. But just every single time this kind of comes up and you talk about creator burnout, YouTube has a model for self-selecting the most popular content, the most clickbaity content, and the shallowest surface-level content. And I've got an article and a script that I'm working on right now. It's what burned me out when I was mostly an audio guy. Some audio guy was really tied into voice acting and home recording and high-end recording equipment and microphones and headphones and speakers. And some audio guy was a much snarkier individual than some gadget guy is now. But what also killed me was the constant churn of immediacy from the audience. What killed some audio guy was I would put a ton of effort into, here's a starter article on treating a part of your room. You want less reflections and you're working from a corner and you're in a small bedroom and this is how you can accomplish that. And then a couple months later, I'd get a request from someone, hey, I'm setting up my booth for the very first time. Can you tell me how to do all this stuff? And it was like this, I'm entitled to your knowledge. And you're like, okay, cool. I wrote this article about it. Oh yeah, I saw that article, but I want you to tell me specifically what I need to do in my space for free with your time for a one-on-one kind of consult. And, like, that's infuriating when it's one person. It is exhausting when you're getting comment after comment after comment. It's an endless sea of beginners. And see, the thing is, I really love learning about acoustics and audio, and, like, I'm just now catching up on some of these exotic consumer audio technologies and playing with new DACs and amps, and, like, I'm learning again, and it's fun again. But I stayed out of audio for years because what I had in my brain for knowledge was demanded by individuals who couldn't even read through the old stuff. They needed something new and immediate because that would address what they're talking about for their specific situation. And the same thing happens in phones. The second I see, like, hey, I'm really thinking about buying one of these two phones, what do you think? I run away. I don't spend any time on those. I mean, on the Patreon, if you can give me a little bit more information on what you like, I'll share some other opinions on that on the Patreon, because I feel like that is a little bit more respectful of my time. But if it's just a random comment on YouTube, I want to get an Xperia or a Moto. What would you buy? Nope, I'm out. I'm gone. I can't give you an ounce of brain power. I have to evade and completely ignore that kind of comment. Because you get stuck in constantly focusing on the very beginning intro, and you as the creator never get to grow beyond that. And so when I hear some of these creators, like, you know, Scott Peachy sells himself short as being this kind of affable, you know, whatever, I'm just kind of a fan of mobile tech, but that dude's brain operates at a much higher tier. And do you think he's going to be satisfied if it's just constant and endless? Well, why don't you just read off the specs of the new Pixel phone set to pretty B-roll? No, of course that's going to burn him out. Of course. I mean, because he wants to talk about cooler aspects of the lifestyle of owning that phone, and the YouTube algorithm literally won't let him do that without punishing his channel. So, I'm sorry, if GameSky's leaving YouTube, I can't say I'm horribly surprised. I'd be very upset. I'd be very disappointed. Dude makes such good content, really good content. And again, coming at it not from the learned perspective of an audio engineer talking about audiophiles. Like, it's such a comfortable, lived-in, and consistent approach to talking about consumer electronics. And if you lose a voice like that, man, you don't get it back. All it does is further teach all of the models that business model doesn't work. So the YouTube algorithm works even harder at only pointing you to someone who's the pretty B-roll tracking across your screen of the phone, and here are the specs kinds of videos. Because if that's all you can keep up with on YouTube, then that's all you get. You lose all the color and the nuance and the passion. And it's just someone who turned marketing into their job on YouTube, and they're not delivering any value. They're only confirming the bias of the largest audiences on YouTube. If the bias says only talk about iPhones, then that's all you're going to get. If the bias says tell me why my Samsung phone is great, I already bought a Samsung phone. I don't want you to educate me on it. I just want you to pat me on the head and let me know that I made the right choice. Then every single video of every product is just going to be Samsung bias confirmation. And if you don't want that, you need to make YouTube the future you want to see. Oh, Tech Love and Mama. Again, it's someone who can share sort of a personal experience in bridging this conversation also. Tech Love and Mama writes, makes me sad to hear. I'll miss the content, but I so get it. I'm happy and I feel blessed that I met you and the others before leaving YouTube. And again, someone who was looking at creating on a video platform, but is still hyper engaged in the conversation. Tech Love and Mama is passionate about this technology, mobile gadget lifestyle. She provides value in every chat that I see her in. We lost her as a video production resource. That should make us, I mean, again, for her own health and mental health and sanity, I am so glad. but that should make the rest of us a little sad that we don't have that as a contributing voice in our community. Because we get things from a variety of creators that we won't get if it's just confirmation bias on YouTube. Oh, I missed another one, and I am so sorry. There was another subscriber on Twitch. Oh no, who did it? Q3 Becker subscribed at tier one. Oh, please let me know if I missed another one. I am so bad at keeping the split chat going with all the different platforms, but I just saw El Jefe Reviews jump in the chat too. Also subscribed at tier one. They're on a 44-month streak. Jeff, thank you so much, man. I love you like a brother. Gormlord, are you saying make YouTube great again? I feel YouTube in its current incarnation is irredeemable. What I tell other people now is you cannot rely on the whims of YouTube. So you can use YouTube as free server hosting. And that's about what you're going to rely on it for. But if you do not have a direct connection with your audience outside of one specific platform, then you are beholden to the whims of that platform. So when I joined YouTube, my style of video, like top-down camera, hands manhandling a gadget on a rickety table, that's like all gadget reviewing was, disembodied hands talking about a phone. And I might go back to that because it was so much easier to shoot. Now, YouTube has gone through phases of longer form content, shorter form content. They tried to build community. They tried to staple on social networking features. They've played with the platform so many times. Now, the fad is shorts because shorts are just completely disposable, keep people scrolling over and over and over and over again, TikTok style. I don't make content like that well. I'm really bad at it. So my current flavor of video production is woefully off the pulse of what YouTube is prioritizing. So my contributions to their platform are kind of ignored, even though I have an audience of people that subscribe to the channel that seem shocked whenever they run across one of my videos. Like, they thought I stopped making YouTube videos. And that's a bummer. That really sucks. I know, man, we're getting old. Jeff says, 44 months? Sheesh, it feels like it was just yesterday that you started this Twitch stream. It's funny, it's like, at once it feels like yesterday, and then it also feels like, but Twitch is an institution that I have always contributed to. It's such a head trip, especially over the last couple of years and starting to get out of the pandemic and become a member of society again. It's so tough. Yeah. All right. We do have a couple stories here in the news block. I'm going to share this because everyone in this chat probably already knows my concerns over things like Bluetooth earbuds. And we have El Jefe Reviews here in the chat. Jeff is my A number one pick. If you really want a good, consistent application of testing Bluetooth earbuds, Jeff is my number one. Jeff's channel, El Jefe Reviews, single-handedly brought me back to considering Bluetooth earbuds as a viable consumer product again. It was his informed commentary, his consistent comparisons, and it was just his interest in this as we watched Bluetooth audio start getting really good. But we've had conversations, and I'm sure Jeff would agree with some of the tone of this article. I would like to see some traffic go to the Wall Street Journal to help sort of popularize. If the Wall Street Journal sees a little nudge of traffic to this article, then that helps their reporters make more articles like this. And I feel this is an area where consumers are very undereducated. And I'm going to share this article right now. The problem with your dying AirPods and other Bluetooth earbuds. When earbuds' tiny lithium-ion batteries die, they can't be replaced. This is written up by Nicole Nguyen. They have a listen to this article. It's about a 7-minute listen. This is Wall Street Journal reporting, and everyone in this chat already knows what's going on here. Everyone in this chat, I am sure, understands what my issues and my philosophy and my problems with Bluetooth audio are. And I'm sure a number of you might share some of that too. E-waste, disposability, good premium audio should last for a really long time. We don't get that when you have batteries and radios and charging docks and all of this other equipment that needs to be managed and maintained. If I bust the cable on my really expensive in-ear monitors, I can go and get a new cable. I don't have to go and buy a whole new set of earbuds. You all already know all this, but we are a tiny little bubble of tech education in a sea of major corporation marketing. And I still run into consumers like, yeah, I don't get it. Like, I've had my AirPods and now they're not working and blah, 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 blah. How old are your AirPods? Like 2 years. They're not that old. Yeah, but that's kind of the half-life of a tiny little battery in there. And if we can't make these things more repairable, then your only resource is to take those $100 earbuds, chuck them, because there's really... I mean, you take them back to the manufacturer and they can try and recycle and do all that stuff. But really, they're not recyclable to any great degree. And then you go and buy some new ones. And it's one of the ugliest aspects of consumerism. We dropped the headphone jack on phones because a decent $20 pair of earbuds with a little care can last you significantly longer than wireless earbuds can. And even when we go to something like cans, like big over-ear Bluetooth headphones, we have a little bit more access to making those things repairable just for the extra space. But Apple's business model is sell this totally sealed shut, completely unrepairable product, and we know you're going to have to replace it more frequently, so we're going to make more money at the expense of your wallet and the environment. And that's why they got rid of the headphone jack. And yeah, absolutely. I know Jeff is on the pulse for this. We live in the market where we need to comment on the consumer behavior and review these things properly. But at the same time, there's like this little nugget. So Jeff says, yeah, actually, we talked about this during my stream yesterday. So Jeff streams on Sundays. And I would say he's the perfect like precursor. So like catch Jeff on Sundays, really get your audio fix in, and then you're ready for me to be a cranky Git soapboxing for 2 hours on Monday morning. But it's like, we've got to be able to broach both of those parts of the conversation. I'm telling you, Bluetooth audio has gotten so much better over the last couple of years. The quality has improved, codecs have improved, battery life has improved, charging speeds have improved. We're getting some more flavors where it's not just one driver that sort of plops in front of your ear. We're getting different ear tips and different molds and different casing and different drivers, or... Bluetooth audio is evolving, but Bluetooth audio is going, for me, is always going to have that pain point of much shorter lifespan and no repairability. If we want a Bluetooth audio to finally catch some of the last remaining areas where cabled audio wins, we've got to address those topics. We've got to fix those situations for consumers too. I've got Sennheiser HD25s, little like kind of DJ style mixing headphones. They used to be the primary headphone you'd see on sports broadcasts, you know, like the little microphone that would pop out. Plastic headband, super lightweight, but clamp on top of your ears and block out noise around you. Those things are, I think, almost 18 years old now. What do you believe that there are going to be any Bluetooth headphones that last you 18 years? I don't think you're going to find anything that's going to last that long. Now, I've replaced ear pads. I've replaced cables on one of them. I had to replace an ear cup on one. But like for what was a really expensive pair of DJ headphones at the time, when I got them, I got two pairs of them. They've lasted me on location shoots. They've lasted me in studios. I used to use them just as kind of casual listening headphones. They're not the best for that, but I liked them. 18 years. My headphones are old enough to vote. Do you think some AirPods are going to make it that long? Because I don't think they will. And that's, to me, what I feel we lose when we don't sort of showcase the convenience of today versus the longevity of tomorrow and the repairability of a classic professional grade piece of equipment, especially because I want to say you can get like the newest version of the HD of what Sennheiser replaced the HD25s with. I don't think they're as well built. They're nicer built, like they look and feel nicer because the HD25s are really plasticky and creaky and stuff, but I don't think they're as practical. But I still want to say, I think the newest version of that model of headphone is like $300 max. And I'm sure you're going to get a headphone that is built for professional application or DJ style application and will last far longer than anything spent around $300 that's wireless. Yeah, exactly. And Jeff, not until we have a new power source for our mobile electronics. By then, that type of tech would revolutionize the planet. Yeah, it is like at some point we're going to make a unicorn battery. And we keep seeing in 5 to 10 years, a new battery technology will take over. And I've been seeing those headlines for like 20 years now. Oh, in 5 years, we'll have graphene. In 5 years, we'll have solid state. In 5 years, we'll have this. In 5 years, we'll have that. And you're like, well, I mean, batteries have gotten better, but I don't think they've revolutionized anything yet. So it's pretty great. Dave Burns. Apple didn't want to tie anyone down to a specific generation of AirPods. And that way you always know that you'll be on you know, sort of a more recent piece of hardware. So when they burn out on you, it's actually a consumer benefit that you'll get something new. So there you go. I totally had it wrong. I'm glad Dave was here to sort of show me the way. I wanted to also highlight this. We have got a pair of sort of frustrating Google announcements we don't have to spend a lot of time on. Google Glass Enterprise Edition is being pulled. As of March 15, 2023, Google will no longer sell the Glass Enterprise Edition. Will my Glass Enterprise Edition device still work? If so, for how long? Yes, it will still work. After September 15th, 2023, you will continue to be able to use the Glass Enterprise Edition device and existing software, but no software support or updates from Google are planned. So, hold on, I want to say, if there is a bug fix, will you fix it? If so, for how long? Google provides system images for Glass Enterprise Edition, and third parties are responsible for developing and maintaining apps. No software updates from Google are planned. However, the latest system images will remain available on the system image pages and through the OTA update process until at least April 1st, 2024. So, this to me is real bad news. I've done some reviewing and work. I kind of backed off because, like, the videos didn't do super great on my channel, but I loved working. I loved covering Panasonic Toughbooks. They had like new tablets and sort of these small like barcode type scanner devices. They were flipping all of their Windows CE contracts over to Android, embedded Android. They had a deal worked out with Qualcomm. I want to say it was for the Snapdragon 660, and someone will have to correct me on that. But Qualcomm promised like a decade of support for the Snapdragon 660, and that was going into a whole bunch of these embedded devices, which is a phenomenal amount of processing power for these sort of low-power corporate productivity devices, these enterprise devices. The contracts that you engage with and the support that you offer for companies has to be different than the brief window of time that we support consumer products. And so yet again, Google's pulling the plug on something that I don't even think a lot of people realized was still being made. Google Glass was this very, this big failure in trying to push the boundaries on heads-up displays and augmented reality and sort of eye-level computing. And it kills me because, again, I loved my Focals by North, and I don't really even care about full AR right now. What I want is a smartwatch interface up at eye level. And that's it. That's our next step. And I'll be so happy when we can finally get something practical and immediate for that kind of access. And it makes every interaction with your phone so much more organic. So Google flips this from being a consumer-facing product to being an enterprise-facing product, and they've got these things out in the ecosystem. Apparently, they sell in a couple of like warehouse situations. They sell pretty well. It is really bad form to pull the plug on a product and then basically cease support a couple months after your announcement that you're ending the line, and then pull all of the supporting software a couple months after that. That's real bad. If a company had invested in Google Glass and they were using it in a warehouse in September, they're done with updates. And then April of the year following, they're done with any kind of software support that their IT departments could get from Google. That is only going to further entrench the mindset that you cannot trust anything Google for your corporate solution. That's going to have a ripple effect. A company like Panasonic has to work even harder at popularizing Android for people who are working in warehouses. I was using this really futuristic tech that sat on my face, and Google pulled the plug and left us high and dry in under a year. So why would I go and use a Panasonic Android tablet when I know that Google kills these kinds of projects? That's the kind of wide ripple that these types of business decisions have. And I know it was probably built into their contract, built into their terms of service, like, oh, we reserve the right to do this, and you're buying this for what it does now, and we're not really going to be able to support, or blah, 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 blah. And none of that matters. What matters is the emotion of eroding the confidence of the platform. And so Google Glass is such a tiny little aspect of that, and I understand why they're killing it. But that's still going to contribute to the ripple effect of Google just kills all their projects. Why would we ever trust them to make something new? And that's going to have the continued spiral effect. Every single time we see this, people waited on Stadia. Stadia proved the technology of game streaming, but people waited. I don't know that I want to get in bed with Google. Google kills all these projects. I'm not sure that this is how I want to do business with games. And what happened? Google didn't see the adoption that they wanted to see. And instead of really trying to muscle it out in the market and build the confidence and build the relationships and hire the developers and publish the games, you know what? We can just kill it. It's like we're so screwed right now, not having another player in this market. I should not be this thirsty for Windows on ARM. I should be really happy with like the future of Android, and they're making better support for tablets, and hopefully we'll get a desktop mode, and they're merging more Android and Chrome bits. Like, I should be excited about that. I have zero confidence. Android does not exist for anyone under the age of 20. Like, it's gone. Generationally, we're dead. When those consumers start really coming of age and buying their own products and really shopping in the market, none of them are going to be buying Android. So already that squeeze is happening right there. Then on the corporate side and the services side and the support side, we're already seeing the aspects of like, well, but why would I put my faith in that? Google's going to kill it in a couple years. And not only are they going to kill it, they're not going to extend support. They're just going to yank it. They're just going to yank the plug out of the wall. And we'll have like 6 months to figure out our software strategy if we were leaning on Google Glass. So now we've got to look at alternatives. If we want another heads-up display, we can go to Vuzix or some of these other headsets. That's a huge cost to outfit a fleet and to change up our business strategy and our software. We've got to get our IT departments on it. And we only have until April of next year to do it. That's so dumb. You gave them a year. When Panasonic does like a business license for that kind of thing, man, they're talking like a decade of support and parts. Tough books. You get a Panasonic laptop and they've got this like super hyper longevity built into the system. You can buy a 5-year-old Panasonic Tough Book and there's still a plethora. I don't want you telling me you have a plethora, if you know what a plethora is. They have a plethora of parts on the market for you to repair, rebuild, or upgrade that laptop. And if you buy in today at the most expensive prices, they're talking about parts in the market for like 5 to 7 years after that. It is not uncommon to pick up a 10-year-old Toughbook and still make it a functional machine again. This 1-year piddly stuff is only going to piss off the few companies that really got on board with Google Glass. It's so bad. I hate that this is the flavor of churn. We're trying to only spike the popularity of a project. And if it doesn't immediately take off at launch, then they kill it. But now no one wants to do business with them until they see that the project lasts, so that nothing is ever going to get through again.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Oh, Gormlord, I can't even broach that. Gormlord says, hey, can we get a quick list on the projects Google has killed? There's Google Glass, Stadia, Daydream, Google Plus, what else? Man, what is it, killed by Google? Hold on, let me see if I can pull it up. Killed by Google .com? Is that what it is? So I think they just pulled like another publisher tool or something like that. But if you go to killedbygoogle.com, you'll see lots of stuff. I'll throw this on the screen share and then just scroll. Excuse me. Google Optimize, IoT Core, Grasshopper, Conversational Actions, Currents, OnHub, Stadia, Competitions, YouTube Originals, Threadit, Duplex on the Web, YouTube Go, Google Surveys, Hangouts, Chrome Apps, Cormo Jobs, Google Duo, Android Auto for phone screens, G Suite, Android Things, Cameos on Google, Google Assistant, Angular JS, Streams, Material Gallery, Google Toolbar, Google Sites Classic, Your News Update, Google Bookmarks, Backup and Sync, Google My Maps, Chatbase, VR 180 Creator, Posts on Google, Tour Builder, Fitstar Yoga, Fitbit Coach. I have made it 1/7 down their list with all those things that I just said. And the list just keeps going and going and going. It's like the Energizer Bunny. So all of the sort of moonshot projects and all of the big things that they've seen over the years, all of the numerous projects that Google has killed, this is the reputation that Google is building. And it makes me sad because when Google does something well, I assume it's going to fail because consumers won't trust it. I think their list is currently at 280, somewhere around there, 280 projects that have just been decimated. So, yeah, Gormlord, ha 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 ha, I had no idea it was that big. Yeah, it's a lot. And Carl, exactly, this puts such a sour taste in fans' mouth. I am a fan of Google making these products and services, or buying some of the companies that make these products and services. Carl writes, this is why I hate Google. You can't trust them to keep a service. This is why I hate Google. You can't trust them to keep a service of theirs up for a long period of time. And every time I say Google, my Poco freaks out. So I'm not saying the whole trigger. I'm only just saying the G word. And it starts recording all of the podcast for me on my Poco mic. All right. So that was Google Glass getting killed. The other thing that's frustrating, because this is going to be a problem for North Americans on Pixel phones, but it's not a Google problem. And I really bristle when editorials reporting on this news, when they make it, your Pixel is insecure. Because when people only read the headlines in North America, they're going to go, oh, well, Pixel phones, they're not as good, and I should not buy a Pixel phone. But internationally, this is also affecting a number of other phones, mostly made from Samsung. The problem is a Samsung problem. It's affecting Google phones. That is what we need to highlight. But if you put that article out there, that's a bad story for Samsung. Well, we can't do that. We don't want to upset our Samsung PR relationships. So let's sneak that bit deeper into the article, and we'll only talk about, you know, that it's a Pixel problem. And so when people only see the headline, they'll focus on the Pixel problem, not the Samsung problem. Because Samsung pays our bills. I pulled this one up from 9 to 5 Google because this was one of the first articles I saw that mentioned Exynos. So they didn't put Samsung in the headline. I'm still really upset about that. But they at least mentioned that it was an Exynos issue. So this is written by Abner Lee over at 9 to 5 Google. The article is Google, colon, turn off VoLTE Wi-Fi calling due to severe Exynos modem vulnerabilities on Pixel 6, comma, more. So this is still starting with Google. It's a problem with the Pixel 6, but they at least mentioned that it's because of the Samsung modem. And I really wish they had said Samsung modem vulnerabilities, not Exynos modem vulnerabilities, to really help explain what the problem is, because it's a problem with a Samsung component. So we scroll back down. Let's see. So according to Samsung Semiconductor in January of 2023, these are the affected chipsets, the Exynos modems that are being impacted by this. Samsung Galaxy phones, including those in the S22, M33, I'm not going to list all of these. Up to last year, if you had a Samsung phone with an Exynos chipset, you were probably affected. And this includes S series, M series, and A series phones. So A53, all those Samsung stands who were trying to excuse the terrible performance on the A53, notice how the A52 is not on this list. Because the A52 didn't use an Exynos and a Samsung modem. But to save their own costs and using a slower, hotter running chip, Samsung switched that here in North America on the A53. So you end up with this situation where the Qualcomm-powered Snapdragons weren't affected. But most of the phones sold internationally from Samsung were using Exynos chips and Exynos modems. So all of those phones are affected globally. And I really want people to kind of sort this out. Let me read off this list, including, so these are just the Samsung phones. S22, M33, M13, M12, A71, A53, A33, A21, A13, A12, and A04. So the most popular selling phones internationally, we're talking hundreds of millions of phones, are Galaxy A series devices. Galaxy A series devices with those Exynos chipsets make up roughly 200 million phones sold per year, let alone how many of those are legacy devices that last for several years out in the market. If you are affected by this bug on a Samsung modem, how many more Samsung customers do you think will be affected versus Google customers? The chips over several years that sell 200 million phones a year, or the couple million phones that Google has sold since the introduction of the Pixel 6? Because in the United States, the phones affected are the 6 and 6 Pro, the 6A, and the 7 and 7 Pro. Now, Google isn't even in the top three. They're not the third place. Motorola is the third place phone manufacturer in the United States. So when we're talking about a potential consumer harm, should we label the headline Google phones have a problem, or do we think hundreds of millions more Samsung customers might be more affected by that? But we didn't label that. Even in one of the best headlines that I've seen on this article, Google turn off VoLTE and Wi-Fi calling due to severe Exynos modem vulnerabilities on the Pixel 6 and more. Do you know what is an order of magnitude more all of the Galaxy phones affected by this modem vulnerability. So if you know anyone in your circles of family and friends who have an Exynos-powered device, if they have a Galaxy phone not in the United States or in South Korea, they need to know about this. But the majority of the North American tech press is focusing on the Pixel having this problem when hundreds of millions of phones from Samsung are similarly affected by this modem vulnerability. Why is that? Why can't we write a headline saying hundreds of millions of Galaxy owners affected by Samsung modem vulnerability, also select phones from Google and Vivo and others? Vivo, I think, had a few Exynos chipsets out. I believe one of the X series phones recently. No, they've got it later in the article. Yes, Vivo phones, including the S series and the X60 and X70. So not the Pros, but the base model X60 and X70 had Exynos modems included in them too. So, and I'd be willing to bet you that Vivo probably sold as many X60s and X70s as Google has with all of the Pixel 6 Plus series of phones. If we're jumping through hoops and telling Pixel owners, oh, you got to turn off Wi-Fi calling, hundreds of millions of Galaxies, hundreds of millions of Galaxies, a couple million Pixels and Vivos, hundreds of millions of Galaxies. I hate being such a broken record, but whenever we talk about a potential consumer harm, the scale and the impact of that harm needs to be a part of the headline. A couple million Pixel owners, that sucks. That really does suck. Google is put into a terrible position having to figure out a Samsung problem. Samsung's first-party devices. Samsung's devices. Hundreds of millions of people potentially affected by them. And Kappa Cash. Google still has to look bad even when it's a Samsung problem, because we cannot upset the delicate Samsung readers who go to sites like 9to5 Google. And that's what it is. This is still confirmation bias. And now this is a situation that could very well impact more Galaxy owners, especially the way that updates roll out to phones in different regions. There is so much more potential harm in Samsung land on this issue than on Google land or in Vivo land. Like, smartwatches are prone to this. If you have a 4G and LTE capable smartwatch and it has an Exynos modem in it, I bet you there are probably as many Exynos smartwatches out there as there are Pixel 6 Pros. Shouldn't we be just as concerned for Galaxy Watch owners as we are people who own Pixel 6 and 6 Pro? They were selling like 3 million units? I don't know how many Pixel 6s Google sold. I bet you they're pretty close. and Gormlord, that's exactly it. These tech editorialists, these review sites, they don't want to... So Gormlord writes, they probably don't want to deal with a horde of Samsung fans coming after them. And it's going to be a bunch of people in the comments. Well, actually, the real problem is this and the software and the updates and one UI and it just works. So you're biased. You're biased if you talk about a Samsung problem. But the real problem is not... So when Samsung has a problem, Samsung can fix it on their Samsung software with their Samsung modems. But Google, that's not the same. So you're biased. So yeah, that's not a great look. And I wanted to wrap up our little... It's already 11:04, so our podcast is running long. I do this all the time. But in terms of how we position information to consumers, I wanted to wrap us up with, this is a story from Giz China. And we had another kind of laugh at this, and I poked some fun at them on Mastodon, because I'm trying to whittle back my usage of Twitter, which has been difficult for me, and I suck. And that we say we vote with our wallet and vote with our time. I am spending more time on Mastodon reading through stuff over there. Dave Byrne's running long? What? So we had a chuckle over the way that this headline was written. So this comes by way of Giz China from F.A. Uden. I have mispronounced your name, and I apologize. European Union hurts Apple again. Apple cannot limit USB Type-C charging speed. So I love this headline. I adore this headline. We want to talk about clickbait and making gadget nerds angry. European Union hurts Apple. If you're an Apple fan, boy, those evil regulators getting in the way of Apple doing business. It's free market. Regulators shouldn't be able to tell Apple how to make their products. If you don't want an iPhone with a lightning connector, you can go buy yourself a flip phone. This is Apple country. You love it or you leave it. Flip side of that, let's say you're a really angry and hateful Samsung knight. The glee over that headline. European Union hurts Apple. Yeah, I'm a Samsung guy. Let's hurt Apple. Yeah, let's get it done. Because the situation here is horrific and frustrating. Apple is trying to break a standard. USB-C is built on an agreed-upon standard of technologies, and Apple benefits from that on the MacBook and the Mac and the iPad. They benefit from that technology. The iPad, if I could get iPad features in an iPhone, I would have a much harder time not owning an iPhone. I would be much more critically interested in split-screening applications and having a desktop mode that I can plug into and proper support for real accessories over USB-C. I would have a much harder time not jumping on the iPhone bandwagon if the features I cared about, the features on my lowly Moto Edge Plus, if I could get some of that kind of functionality in an iPhone, yeah. Yeah, I would have a much harder time voting with my wallet. As it stands now, it's really easy for me to not buy an iPhone for my own personal use because it does nothing for me. It connects to nothing. It supports nothing. It's not a good solution for me. I expect a lot more for a higher price tag. I'm not interested in a really expensive phone that just does phone things. But that's up to you and how you want to spend your money. Apple has continuously broken standards. So on the Mac, you can't file transfer from an Android phone to a Mac without third-party software. Macs don't support the full spec of media transfer protocols in USB. But it looks like your Android is too dumb to talk to your Mac. So Macs just work. Why can't your dumb Android send files to your Mac? Can't send files over Bluetooth to an iPhone. This is so dumb. Bluetooth has a component in the spec for Bluetooth that facilitates file transfers. So, I have my Xiaomi 12S Ultra. So this is the Chinese ROM. I still never really put anything on it. I basically just use it as a camera. But it does not support nearby share because of the Chinese software on this phone. I can't nearby share a photo to one of my other Android phones. So what I do, I fire up Bluetooth, and I send files over Bluetooth when I'm out in the field with my Xiaomi 12S Ultra. I've never flashed it to a global ROM. If I want to send a really great photo, so over the weekend, we went to a friend's birthday party. Everyone had iPhones. In fact, a couple kids had iPad Pros. We're talking kids Lex's age with $1,200 tablets. And the big iPad Pros, not the little ones. All of them broken. I had my Vivo, and I took some really great photos of this little kid birthday party. Couldn't send them to anyone there at the party, because they all had iPhones. And it makes this Android phone look dumb, right? Apple broke my ability to send them a Bluetooth file, and if I just text them the photo, they're going to get a terrible, low-resolution, blurry image. Android phones take such blurry photos. Why can't you just airdrop me the photo? Because that's how iPhones just work. But Apple broke it. Apple broke all that so that you would have to use a more expensive and proprietary solution to interact with other people. And that sucks because the camera on this is way better than any of the iPhones we're shooting photos at that same event. So now Apple is trying to play fast and loose with YouTube, with USB. So some USB cables and chargers will support some things and some features on some iPhones. But USB-C, we're getting to a pretty decently agreed upon spec for what power management and what chargers and how all of this stuff should be supported. But they still want to have a licensed cable. The reason why we still have Lightning connectors on iPhones is because Apple makes a ton of money on companies licensing a proprietary connector, the Lightning connector, on the iPhone. That's the reason why it has this longevity. Apple is trying to do that, to break the USB-C standard. And so the European Union came in and enforced consumer rights, prevented more e-waste from entering into the marketplace. And we know what the conversation from the Apple diehards was going to look like. This is what's so frustrating, because it's so predictable, is Apple was going to be forced to use USB-C. Remember when Rene Ritchie was like, Apple shouldn't ever have to be forced to use a standard connector. USB-C is already 7 years old. Apple should be able to design a new standard, and we should let Apple design the new standard connector for everybody's computers. USB-C is already 7 years old. You know, we shouldn't force Apple to use an older connector standard, right? So we already know what the Apple argument was going to be. Apple is going to get forced by those dirty, dirty European regulators to use a cable connector that's also found on those filthy Android phones. And then Apple was going to break the experience. I plugged in a USB charger into my iPhone and it charged so slow. Apple was forced to use an inferior technology. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm only going to use MagSafe. That's what Apple wanted. It's so clear. Like, this is so easy to play into the psychology of how Apple breaks the standard, sells a more expensive proprietary solution. It's worse for the environment. It's worse for consumers. The Apple diehard adopters are hurt the worst by this type of business practice, but it all feeds into the psychology of us versus them. You don't want to be a dirty green bubble. You don't want to have one of those filthy USB-C connectors that works really well on the iPad and on the MacBook. On your iPhone, that needs to be kept pure of that regulator interference. So we at Apple, we gave you the USB-C that the EU forced us to put on the phone. It's not our fault that it doesn't work well. We just broke it. We broke the USB-C charge connector so that you would have to buy even more expensive accessories. But that's not us. That was the EU forcing us to use that connector. Well, if you want the fastest charging, I guess. I mean, we've got this other charger. It's way bigger. It only supports your phone. It doesn't support any other accessories. It charges your battery hotter because it's a wireless connector, and induction charging reduces the life cycle of your battery, so you'll have to replace your phone more frequently. But you could go with MagSafe because that's an Apple purity charging standard, not a filthy EU charger that we were forced to use. It's so obvious. The game is so rigged by billions of dollars and generations of this Apple feel-good marketing. That's exactly how that playbook would have run. And we can immediately see it in the headlines on this article. The EU is doing something to Apple. The EU is hurting Apple again, forcing Apple's hand, playing out in the most emotionally divisive phrasing and structuring, because that's what gets shares and clicks on articles. So I just thought this was hilarious. Frustrating because, again, you can sort of see the writing on the wall, but hilarious. So I posted up on Mastodon. I don't even know if I have it. I think I still have Mastodon open. Oh, I have to go to my profile. Let's see. And I can't take all the credit for this because I think Dave was the first one to kind of reply to it, but But I kind of tweaked his writing a little bit. So, you know, hat tip to Dafe. But European Union hurts Apple again. I wrote, EU regulators reduce e-waste, enforce using appropriate cable standards, and protect consumers against Apple's anti-consumer business practices. I fixed your headline for you, Giz. We had a good chuckle on that on the Patreon. It's so frustrating. Because, again, it's so emotionally manipulative. And, again, it just feeds into what the popularity of these products resembles. So, yeah. USB-C on the iPhone should be awesome. Right now, your iPhone can't connect to external storage without a charger connected to it. Right now, your iPhone can't power accessories. So, like, I've got a little USB flash drive. Your iPhone... Ooh, it's dusty. I just got dust all over my face. I haven't used this flash drive in a while because I also have these little portable SSDs, and I use these portable SSDs a lot more. You know, what's cool is I can move files from my computer, my desktop, to my laptop, to an Android tablet or an iPad, or to a game console like my Steam Deck, or to an Android phone, all over USB, because USB will power this portable hard drive, this portable solid-state drive. If I plug this solid-state drive into an iPhone, the iPhone can't do anything with it. Can't power it, can't look at it, can't see it, can't do anything with this storage, because it doesn't just work with the iPhone's Lightning connector. I've got these really cool heads-up displays. Portable display here, you put glasses on your face and you have your own large screen TV projection. They work with my laptop, they work with my desktop, they work with my Steam Deck, they work with my Razer Edge, they work with my Moto Edge. It's kind of weird having a Moto Edge and a Razer Edge on your table at the same time. Excuse me. But if you go and check out the reviews on these glasses, these wearable display glasses, you're going to see a ton of negative reviews on these glasses from people who own Pixels and iPhones. And why is that? Because these don't work with iPhones very well. You have to get an adapter to power these glasses to work on the iPhone. What's up with that? They don't even plug into a Google. You can't tell me that the problem is with the Pixel. They misadvertised and misrepresented their glasses. You should be able to just plug them in and get them. They should just work. And iPhone users really aren't familiar with this accessory concept where they're the second-class citizen because of the Lightning connector. They used to have all the dongles and all the adapters and all the earbuds and all the microphones, and everything would go to them first. But now no one wants to make anything for the Lightning connector because we know they're going to switch over to USB-C. So when they switch over to USB-C, Apple is trying to break the open standard of USB-C and only have a licensed version of USB-C that works on the iPhone. You know, because it'll be better for Apple's financials. That's really all it's going to be better for. I can't even finish the rest of that joke. It'll be better for their consumers with less confusion in the market that some USB cables work and some don't. Yeah, it's dumb. Simon says, Hypno, as I'm in Germany right now, I feel ashamed at what's happening to poor Apple. All those poor Apple people getting bullied by those terrible EU regulators. DTNL. I hate the convenience of taking only one cable for all my devices. I'd much rather pay more money to Apple to have individual cables of varying connectors and questionable durability because I'm made of infinite money. But Aditya, those cables don't just work. Because Apple cables just work, I guess. And wrapping us up, this is a question from the Reaper Black. Juan, have you seen photos come out of Oppo's Find X6 Pro, another 1-inch phone contender? I haven't. I've been shooting on the Vivo. I still haven't finished my video on the Vivo. I have the Xiaomi 13, not the 13 Pro. That's the 1-inch camera phone. But the Xiaomi 13 is really interesting. Still haven't finished my video on the Xiaomi. And I promised a friend that I was going to send them the new Poco, this beautiful little yellow Poco. It's been over a month, and I wanted to do a what do you really get kind of a video comparing the 300 euro Poco against a 900 euro Xiaomi. And I still haven't finished that video either. So I don't know if that person is listening. I still promise I will send this Poco to you. They were in the chat earlier today. There's so much that I'm trying to keep up with. So next up, I really want to try and get this gaming accessory video out. I just need to do something fun. And so I'm doing sort of a small, medium, large on Steam Deck and Razer Edge and Nintendo Switch, where if you want to tailor fit your mobile or portable gaming experience, there are some really crazy fun accessories to try. And they play really well with other things, too. So if you spend a little bit of money sprucing up your Steam Deck, those accessories can also go hand in hand with your laptop or your desktop or your smartphone or your tablet. This stuff is really cool. And I don't think consumers really understand because they're so used to the Apple model. I bought this new iPhone, I buy a case just for this new iPhone, and I buy these cables and dongles just for my iPhone. These are my iPhone accessories. And when I show off a laptop dock, they all assume, why would you spend $300 on a portable monitor just for your phone? And you're like, well, it will last multiple phones. Right? Breaking through that consumer fog. If I have a Next dock, it's going to last for multiple phone generations. And it'll work with my camera. And it'll work with a tablet. And it'll work with a game console. And it'll work with my laptop. Consumers are not familiar with that. They're used to, Samsung sold me this one thing and it works the best with Samsung, so I'm only going to use my watch and my earbuds with a Samsung phone. And that's bad. We need to get away from that. That's really awful. I just want to see if there's any other kind of stories to wrap up this year. So Fungi says, I have a story regarding this. Last year, my dad purchased a Scarlett Solo 3rd-gen USB audio interface for me and my sister to record songs with. It was initially intended to be mostly for my sister. Neither me or my sister have a laptop. She's an iPhone user. As you can imagine, the interface is essentially mine at this point because no matter what we tried, it wouldn't work with her iPhone. I use it with Audio Evolution Mobile all the time, and guess what? It works properly. I've done remote field recordings with my Focusrite interfaces and some of my standalone, like my Zoom. I had a Zoom and I had an Olympus portable recorders that had like XLR inputs. And man, I would run podcasts off those things. And now, especially if you've been playing around, like I'm a big fan of these portable. I'm like shoving my face into the microphone right now. But you should definitely check out some of those wireless options, like the Rode Wireless Go 2. So good. Barry Johnson. Don't worry. I am told that person has a Nothing Phone 1 for you. I don't know who you might be talking about, Barry. That person is a total mystery enigma wrapped in a riddle. Onscon, I think I'm still kind of in the mindset, but not as severely since I haven't bought a special watch or special earbuds with a special phone. So this is what's so frustrating, is it takes just a little conversation, but it's like you've got to go person by person to expose them to these ideas. And like I show off a laptop dock, right? One of these lap docks. It's an empty shell. People scoff. Why would you buy that when you could just own a real laptop? And if I show that to a smartphone-focused YouTube viewer, all they can think about is plugging my phone into it, and then I'm done. And then I'll show it to a gamer, and all they can think is I plug it into my Nintendo Switch, and then I'm done. And I've even shown it to a couple camera people, and it's a little less useful for like mainstream photography. Like you need a better quality panel to do things like editing and stuff, but it's just like a monitor for a camera. It can come in handy. And I show that to them and they're like, oh, but I plug my camera into that. That's really expensive. Why would I buy that? And all of those people have other gadgets that would work with that product. Like, you're traveling with a laptop, and you can set up your laptop dock and plug your camera into it and use that as just sort of a portable monitor. Then, when you're ready to edit the photos, you plug your laptop into the laptop dock, and you have a second screen for all your toolkits. So your laptop probably has a higher quality panel. You use that to really edit, make sure your color and calibration is on point, but all of your tools go to the second monitor. And yeah, it's like you're kind of carrying two laptops, but you're also carrying a battery-powered monitor that won't suck battery off of your laptop, and it's protected. So instead of a floppy case, like iPad-style case, you have a clamshell that snaps shut and protects your portable display, just like your laptop protects your laptop display. So there you go. You have two products in one travel shoot that both work with this laptop dock, and it was at the same price or cheaper than most nice battery-powered portable monitors. And then if you have a phone that can connect to it, and then if you have a game console that can connect to it, and then if you have another computer that can connect to it, I don't understand. I don't understand this reluctance. Because I can pull up a portable monitor and say, hey, this is a $200 portable monitor. And people go, whoa, that's really cool. And it's an OLED and it's really high quality. Awesome. This is a $300 battery-powered hub with a screen and a keyboard and a trackpad. But why wouldn't you just buy a cheap Chromebook? Buh. Immediate, like every single time. Why would you buy that screen that plays nice with your nice laptop and your phone and your tablet and your game console and your camera? Why would you buy that when you can buy a cheap Chromebook that does none of those things? So we should probably wrap that up. But Onscon, I mean, like, I kind of feel you on that, where once you invest in broad standards, then you start picking up products and you say, hey, if I buy this and it works with these other things, then I get like so much more value for the money. But it takes so long to educate an individual consumer to look beyond the ecosystem argument that kind of shuts down all of that critical thinking. And again, that's where I think Apple has won in the consumer space, where it just works, is this like knee jerk. They just say this thing, and it's like this magical talisman that they feel good about being in this locked up walled garden. But it doesn't really benefit them the way that they think it does. And that's frustrating, because we're seeing family and friends spending more on gadgets than they probably need to. And that's kind of a harmful consumer behavior in a time with rampant inflation and rising costs and difficulty sourcing these products and pieces. So on that note, have a great week. There are a bunch of phenomenal creators, several of them in the chat. Look out for my buddy TK Bay. He's going to have some fun stuff going up. Barry Johnson, Engineer Reacts, just an incredible force in these streams and these gadget chats. El Jefe Reviews, seriously, if you care about your ears at all, you need to be subscribed to his channel. We're going to be seeing streams going up all week. Gadget Goddess, Easy Computer Solutions. Someone please correct me. I have not been able to tune in on Thursdays before. Is Ike back to streaming? Ike Talks Tech? I really like his vibe. He's really fun. You should follow him too. LaShawn on Fridays. Holla at your boy. I'm missing, who streams, is it Sam Purposely Pixel, the Purposely Pixel podcast, I think is on Saturdays. So, tons of really good conversations happening. Oh, of course, me and TK are going to be doing another live stream. I think we're going to be doing a gaming stream, for the next best of our week. So, yeah. Tons of stuff. And then the individual videos that are going to be coming out. I've got some editorials that I'm going to be writing. I'm going to be keeping up with some of the community on the Patreon. And to fully wrap this up, while I still have a few people still listening to me in this live stream, my revision for my photography book has just been submitted to Amazon. So version 1.2.6 of Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, is soon going to be available on Amazon Kindle. So I am a terrible podcaster, and I should have gotten this set up so that you didn't hear my typing there. If I could spell the name of my own book, Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs. You can get it on Kindle Unlimited, but you can also buy it outright. Let me screen share this right here. I've purchased multiple copies of my own book. I like to send them to people, and that's the only way that I can send it out to someone. This is the biggest update that I have made to this book since originally writing it back in... I started writing this book back in 2014. New for this book, I have gone through every single passage and every single chapter to tweak some of the language. When I originally wrote this book, it was 2015. So I had parts of other chapters that were talking about things like, well, new for LG phones is this 1/2.55 type image sensor, which is significantly larger than that which is on the iPhone 6S. Well, that was 7 years ago. So top to bottom, I still have some passages where I'm talking about, hey, if you have an older phone, this is sort of what you should expect from older camera apps and older camera sensors. But if there's an opportunity to talk about more current and more modern smartphone camera technology, that part of the book got rewritten. And so this is now over 300 pages long. The book started out at 200 pages. There's a new passage on resolution. So these super resolution and megapixel camera modes. There's a new passage on depth of field talking about equivalence. So when you hold up a smartphone camera and it looks more like a DSLR, how we can mathematically arrive at what the comparable optical performance of a phone camera might look like. Which, in a book called Smartphone Photography for Noobs, is a pretty advanced photography concept. So I've started adding to the end of the book additional chapters talking about technology and more advanced camera conversations. But everything has been touched over. There are new images for some of the samples. There are new passages on the smartphone camera apps. I actually did new diagrams looking at depth of field so that it's a clearer representation of what had just been written previously in older versions of the book. And I'm hoping that the formatting is a little bit clearer, because I had at one point like sub chapters, like you could go three sub chapters deep. And now I've made those more cohesive lists of different modes and different settings, as opposed to it being a standalone dynamic sub chapter. It's now just a subheading. It should make it a little bit easier to read. So I'm really excited about that. This was a refresh that I was planning at the end of 2022, and then phones with 1-inch camera sensors started coming out. So I had written up a whole bunch of revisions right before the Xiaomi 12S Ultra had come out. And I was fine with the book sort of ignoring just Sharp, because Sharp and Leica were the only companies that were doing 1-inch camera sensor phones. But when Xiaomi put out the 12S Ultra and you could see that this was a new camera sensor, it was going to be coming to new phones, I held off. So instead of getting the yearly update for 2021 or for 2022, I waited to get my hands on some of this hardware. And I'm really glad I did. So I had to go through and rewrite a whole bunch of passages for this new revision. And so what was going to be early 2023 turned into March of 2023, but it's ready to go now. It's been submitted, and it should be live, I think, by Wednesday, if it's not already. I need to go back in through my Kindle Direct portal to check it out, but it should be ready to go pretty soon if it's not already live in some markets. So, Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs. When I know for a fact that it's been updated and I can see it update in my Kindle app, then I'm going to put a bigger push out on social media, and I'll probably shoot a little video, maybe a short on YouTube, just to kind of help promote it. So yeah, get out and use your cameras. You spent a lot of money on your phone. That was your hard-earned money, and you can get more out of what your phone can do. So yeah, it's good times. I'm happy. I'm really happy. And I need to see if there's another place where I can maybe start publishing it now, because I'm out of the ridiculously long exclusivity on Kindle. Like, there was, to be a part of Kindle Direct as a self-publisher, I had to agree to like an exclusivity of like 4 years. But in that time, I can't just submit the book to Google anymore. Google Books doesn't accept submissions like this. So now I need to see if there's another way that I can and kind of open that up a little bit more. I mean, I've had good experiences with Kindle. I'd like to have other opportunities for people to find the book. So let me take one more drink of water, and then we're going to finally put a pin in this. So Aditi and Nil, sorry, one more question, and then we'll put a pin in this. Aditi writes, you do know that we'll buy a physical copy of it if you ever decide to print it. I love the idea of my book being a living and dynamic organism that can be updated with improvements to phone photography. Where the book started, like if you have an older version of my book, it is laughably out of date. When I'm bringing up examples of depth of field and video performance, someday we'll get cameras that can shoot 4K at 60 frames per second. That would be embarrassing to have in a hard, real physical version. What we enjoy as a hobby evolves rapidly. And I like that my book can be a modular approach to a modular and evolutionary approach to phone photography. You can learn almost anything from my book by applying DSLR and mirrorless techniques to your phone. But there aren't very many resources that focus on the phone aspect of phone photography, and that's what I wanted to highlight. But that also means adopting a fluid conversation, that what we accept today is not going to be the same tomorrow and is going to be very different in a couple years. Like moon zoom. Like, eventually all of our photos will just be fake. But what I am looking at doing is maybe publishing a macro photography book in a physical version, like some sort of coffee table or photo book, and just making that sort of a side project, not as focused on the education of this, but also saying, like, you know, I love taking photos of bugs and snails and flowers and rolling around in the dirt, and our phones are actually really good at those types of hobbyist endeavors, and I can turn that into something that's more, it's got better longevity. Like the photos that I've taken on my, I have a snail photo from my Note 4 that is still one of my all-time favorite photos. It's this little snail climbing on this little teeny purple flower, and it's kind of wrapping itself around the branches, and it's kind of looking up at the camera. And that photo is still a good photo today, even though I took it from a Note 4. Like, that photo still, every time I see my own photo, I go, oh, look at that cute little snail climbing on those flowers. Oh. And I have, like, that little moment of shrug. It's like, that was just a great photo, regardless of what camera took that photo. And now, I would say my technique has improved alongside the technology that we can fit in our pocket. So, at some point, I think I'm going to make that the side project. Is making something that's just kind of fun, very limited reach. Like, I won't have to order very many of them or have them printed, you know, like I'll make that just sort of a limited run, and I can send those out. And I think people might enjoy some of that, especially just, I think that helps add to the conversation. I think it helps add to the reputation of using a phone as a content creation tool. So we'll see. I have a lot of things on my plate right now, so that won't happen anytime soon. So, folks, let me get this out of the way there. I'm really excited for the stuff that's coming up. a lot of things we've been working really hard on are now finally starting to get wrapped up and get finished up. So I hope everybody out there is enjoying these other types of conversations and are finding some fun things to do with their own gadgets, their own technology, sharing that passion with your family and friends. So, sorry, I just saw another comment. I'm not going to get sucked back into the comments. You're not going to distract me again. Folks, I want you all to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I really want you to take care of yourselves. Seriously, you got to take care of yourselves if you're going to be resources to help take care of others. And I'm preaching to the choir, but thank you for everything that you do in helping those around you with being up to date and getting the most and the most fun out of their technology. So catch you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Next week is going to be our pajama podcast, and I'm going to keep this one real chill. We're going to game with TK on Best of Our Week. I might just keep that running. We might just do another game stream for the podcast here, and I'll catch you back. I love you all. Take care. Be well. I'll see you next week.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.